clarification.
Can you pass me? Yeah. Don't be anyone, you please. Thank you.
Which department?
Yeah, economic class. There's no economic only.
Economic place.
We handed all that stuff to the
second. Okay. I think we have distributed them. But do you have them in soft copy?
Oh, give me your email address. I'll email it to you.
Okay, I got it on my car. Can you please put it on the flash?
I don't think anyone flashed it into
the
Okay, good morning to everyone and welcome to the Portfolio Committee for Public Service and Administration. I think you'll all be aware that we have a really packed full house because we've got various clusters coming together today for the reporting session on the MDGs. What we are doing, we will be doing as we did with governance and administration, the same process with other clusters. I will explain that in detail, but I just need to just open up and indicate the processes that are going to happen as of today. Let me take you through the agenda first, and then we will do some apologies. I must indicate most members are still on their way here, and therefore I will introduce them once they are here. There are some few apologies that are before us, and amongst them, I know that all the DGs that are here indicated to me, ministers responsible have made apologies. And I did indicate to them that we do appreciate that DGs are here, and therefore it means we can be able to proceed with the business of the day. We understand that. I'll just go through the apologies that came before me now. We have the apology from Minister Khadebe, the apology from Minister Baloyi, and the apology from the Deputy Minister Baloyi, and also Minister Lamini. I'm sure you'd know that Minister Khadebe is from Justice, Baloyi from Public Service and Administration, and the Deputy Zozo, and then Minister Lamini, Social Development. We have another apology from honourable members, from Honourable Nyakembe, who won't be here. I'm not very sure, no reasons were provided, just a note. And we have, just to quickly do an introduction, I'm still waiting for a list of DGs that was circulated, because I have to also indicate to you how we're going to run our session for today. Thank you very much. Okay. I will introduce the members of Parliament that are here. Others will join us along the way. I am Honourable Moloi Moropa, Chair for Public Safety and Administration. This is Honourable Mohali, who is trying to get her place to sit at this point in time and shifting all other people to give her space. It's Honourable Mohali. That is Honourable Williams, who's been shifted away from where he was seated. And then we've got Honourable Suka next to Honourable Mohali. We've got Honourable Dreyer. And we have Honourable Van Skalvig. There is Honourable Boshiko just after Honourable Williams there, who is also present with us here. We want to appreciate that all of you have heeded the call. Of course, it's a huge program, you know. In fact, it's the whole oversight to the whole government progress, and therefore, we have picked up things that we normally don't pick up. For an example, not getting presentations on time, you know. And today we're actually providing a bit of an exception. We normally don't really take it because it's part of what assists us to go through those and be able to prepare ourselves as members. We will see if there are things that will require a follow-up out of this meeting because normally we have that in advance, and we are really fussy if we haven't found a presentation on time. We take it that this is a bigger program because it talks to the entire implementation of the government's work, and we haven't called at last us in this fashion. And I will say a lot about that maybe during the process or even after, but I need to indicate to everyone present that that is the intention of Parliament, to actually work with the with government in terms of the cluster, and therefore we think it's a good collaborated way of us finding the entire impact, and also it's, you know, it makes things, it facilitates things much easier. I will indicate it once I give you feedback on in terms of what happened on governance and administration. But I quickly have to take you through our agenda so that you actually know what is going to happen, and I will therefore introduce all the delegation that is present, the leaders, and then they will take you through the rest of who is with us. On the copy of our agenda, our agenda stands as follows today. There's a cluster meeting on the implementation of the Millennium Development Goals. So it's all clusters, and it will go as this. It will be a briefing by Minister of Justice and Constitutional Development on the peace and stability cluster's implementation of the MDG. We know that it will be the DG. Again, we've got briefing by the Minister of Social Development on the contribution of the Social Protection and Community Development Cluster on the implementation of the Millennium Development Goals for South Africa. Okay, and then we will lastly have briefing by the Minister of Rural Development and Land Reform on the contribution of the Economic Sector and Employment Cluster to the implementation of the MDGs. Okay, that will be the first part. That is the first part of our agenda. Secondly, on the agenda, we have the update by the Minister of Public Service and Administration on the HIV AIDS training and policies in the public service. I will indicate what brings that there. And lastly, it will be, if we have time, honorable members, which I think we can actually, after we've finished the business of the clusters, we'll have the consideration of the draft minutes, as we know that we are towards our recess, so that we are, when we leave, our administration part in terms of minutes and all other issues are adopted, so that if there's anything that requires implementation from our minutes, it's possible for us to do that, and it can only happen once the minutes are adopted. Okay, so that's the agenda for today. I have suggested an amendment, which I'm actually negotiating with members, that we immediately start with the Minister for Public Safety and Administration, and I just need to, like I indicated with Justice Lasser, ministers, all ministers have made apologies, but we do have DGIC, and we have a principle of proceeding, and we're grateful that everyone is ready with the presentation. And therefore, I'm negotiating that we start with the second item that is on the agenda, because it actually talks to a cluster that we've already interacted with, which makes it easy for us to maintain the flow, and then we'll be able to get into all other clusters. Because what it actually means is that there was something that we picked up from this cluster which needs a follow-up, which will happen to other clusters once something of that nature happens. If members accept, can they help? Thank you. We all agree. Thanks, honourable members. Okay. Then, before we then proceed, I will introduce who is here with us. We have the DG for Social Development, who is the Chairperson for Social Protection and Community Development Cluster. That is Mr. Vusi Madonsela. Thank you. Before they do the presentation, they will actually introduce the entire delegation. We have Nonkululeko Sindani. She's the DG for Justice and Constitutional Development. She's also the Chairperson for JCPS Cluster. Thanks. We have Mduduzi Shabani, the DG for Rural Development and Land Reform. Thank you. We have Kenny Govenda, that you all know, members. Kenny Govenda is the acting DG for Public Service and Administration. For those who don't know. Okay. Also, amongst us, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members. We've got Palile Lehosa, that is familiar to most, who's the DG for statistics, the Statistic General, statistician for South Africa. He's a statistician general. I think we need to really understand that terminology. He's a statistician general for the South Africa. That's DG Palile Hlonolo. Hey, can you correct me? Paddy. Oh, that's okay. Palile Hosa. That's 2A. You know, I should be knowing that. Okay. Thank you, honorable members, ladies and gentlemen. So we have a full day, you know, and we want to utilize this day to the maximum. You know, and just to give a brief background, Public Service and Administration had been working quite closely with Auditor General together with the Public Service Commission in terms of doing an overarching oversight to government, and therefore we found it a very meaningful instrument. And as a result, there is a requirement to an overarching oversight to government, and we believe that this kind of a cluster impact will assist Parliament to have an overview, best view, to find out if this budget that we pass every day, standing on podiums, screaming that this is happening, if there is a maximum impact in the implementation of programs. And as a matter of principle, again, it actually, you know, the collaboration, which is in a cluster format, actually brings another sphere of showing that it's, you know, quite working together, and it facilitates the work quite easier and much good. As I am opening this meeting, and as we will be embarking on this process as the Public Service and Administration, I'm sure most of you would know that there is also a gender MDG program that is taking place, where the Women's Caucus is having a workshop as it stands, and we therefore appreciate, because it's a Women's Caucus and then it has NCOP, it therefore also looks into how best can they look into the gender aspect. And as we know about the issue of the report that had came before Parliament of the MDGs, which had the involvement of the social civil society, and therefore there was no role that Parliament had played, but now the Parliament will be doing the oversight. Those are some of the things while we're doing this MDG oversight, we are looking into how are we going to address areas where there are commitments that government does in its work of implementing programs, when they do treaties, conventions, whatever agreements, how then do we sort of collaborate around, how do we come together in terms of our role as Parliament? It's a discussion that is ongoing, it's a preparation that will lead to the seminar. There are various ways that this oversight is taking place. It's in this manner, a cluster fashion. There are also individual committee oversight processes taking place. There are various legislatures taking place, speakers forums, salsas, in a form of involving Parliament. And after all this report had been done, Parliament is going to sit down and identify what are the grey areas, what are the systems moving forward, how are we going to work best. And also, you know, the good thing is that most of the departments, in fact all the government's work has been aligned to MDGs in terms of the strategic plans, which therefore means even though sometimes it was not announced that we're now doing MDG as MDG, but oversight has been taking place, and therefore oversight on even the MDGs has been taking place. It's just that now it's pronounced and it's given a particular focus, and therefore we want at the end of this session to sit down and actually say, what does it mean for the country, what does it say, and you know, how do we, you know, because it's a significant growth in terms of interaction, in terms of the institutions of governance. I won't waste time because we've got a lot on our plate. I will actually request that all the leaders of delegations will introduce their delegation prior to the presentation. And just to indicate that it was very interesting for Public Service and Administration when we had a presentation from the Public Service and Administration, where they gave the governance and administration cluster report, where we realize how the systems are aligned, what are the weaknesses, what are the strengths, and where are we doing well, and so on. And therefore, it gave us an overall understanding what is happening in the. And therefore, we're moving to other areas now, as we have these other three clusters. And what we're going to do, from our report, once we sat and looked into the governance, the issue of HIV and AIDS which is appearing here on the program, became very significant, and it's therefore relevant to all these clusters. And therefore, I know that while we requested the department to prepare that kind of a presentation, it's not only benefiting governance and administration, but it's actually a mainstream subject which impacts to all other clusters. If the department is ready, I will request Acting DG Govinda to actually lead us in terms of introducing his delegation and therefore proceeding. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and honourable members. Just to introduce, to indicate, Madam Chair, we're doing a follow-up. So the presentation is a joint presentation between DPSA and Palama. I have with me as part of the delegation Dr. Sipo Sanabe and Ms. Subedar from Palama will be jointly doing the presentation covering the HIV/AIDS and TB management policy for the public service, as well as the mainstreaming guidelines with regard to the HIV/AIDS, which Dr. Sanabe will be doing, and Ms. Subedar will focus on the gender mainstreaming training run by Palama. And I also have with me Ms. Barbara Watson, who is the Chief Director responsible for diversity management in the public service. And Shamila is with us as well. I mustn't forget about this. Madam Chair, without spending lots of time introducing and discussing the topic, let me hand over to the presenters, Dr. Sipo Sanabe.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, DGs, colleagues. As indicated, we're going to be making this presentation. The outline will start with the context, a developmental context towards the whole issue of mainstreaming of HIV and AIDS and gender. Say a little bit about the policy itself and the pillars for implementation and some achievements with regard to the training that we have conducted. And of course, we'll also have the training on gender mainstreaming and do some concluding remarks. Just to remind all of us that the context for our clusters implementation of HIV and AIDS and TB management policy in the public service really is aligned with outcome 12, that of delivering on an efficient, effective, development-oriented public service that is empowered and a fair, inclusive citizenship. In this regard, we have developed this policy, and specifically this policy makes provision for a developmental approach or dealing with HIV and AIDS as a developmental issue. By that means, we should be able to mainstream HIV and AIDS into the public service and administration, and that we mean, by that we mean that mainstreaming of HIV and AIDS is a process that enables all of us as development actors to address the causes and the effects of AIDS in an effective and sustained manner, both through our usual work, which is really what is our mandate, and within our workplace for the benefit of our internal stakeholders. Now, the objectives of this policy in brief are aligned with the current National Strategic Plan on HIV and AIDS and TB, and that is to provide HIV and AIDS prevention, treatment care and support, to manage compliance with human rights and legal rights, and to ensure justice, and to ensure that there is efficient monitoring, research, surveillance on HIV and AIDS and TB. We do so for each and every one of those objectives, guided by the results-based management approach, which is the current outcomes-based approach of managing the developmental agenda of government's work, and which really looks at results at different levels, specifically at outputs and outcome and impact level. We do so at different levels of implementation of these policies, and those levels are at a macro or at a national level, where we develop policies and frameworks, at a provincial level, where most of service delivery is taking place, and of course at a micro level or at a departmental level, where also implementation is taking place across all the four policies. processes of that that drive the implementation of this policy, and these cover capacity development, organizational systems, governance initiatives, and economic and development initiatives. Now, with capacity development initiatives, these are the initiatives aimed at developing individual capability of employees, of managers, professionals, to manage the HIV and AIDS and TB management policy. And you know, the other bullets really say who the target audience is for that particular process pillar. The organizational support systems initiatives, these are initiatives to assess and develop departmental capacity to ensure that there are specific systems to implement HIV and AIDS and TB in the public service. And governance initiatives is what we are doing together as government departments with ourselves and other stakeholders outside government to ensure that the governance is properly managed. And the various stakeholders like SANAC, NETLAC, the National Institute for Occupational Health, that we work together to implement this policy. The economic and developmental initiatives, these are our international obligations to respond to new guidelines, declarations, protocols at SADC, AU, specifically at the AU, where our Minister for Public Service and Administration, is a focal point for the Africa Peer Review Mechanism, and HIV and AIDS is a cross-cutting issue that he has to annually report on. And then, of course, there are country reports that we are obligated to report on at UNGAS, SADC, and African Union, and there are new developments at the United Nations, like we just had a new declaration on HIV, ILO, there is a new guideline, etc. All of those international institutions we work with through that pillar. Then I just wanted to unpack a little bit about the each and every one of those pillars and what we have achieved in that regard. On capacity development initiatives, we have managed to train public servants on mainstreaming of HIV and AIDS using the UNDP curriculum as part of our agreements at the SADC level, where as the DPSA, we are the focal department. We have developed a costing tool, the DPA costing model, and government departments were trained on how they can be able to cost their programs to implement. Of course, we have had workshops on how do we guide government departments to operationalize their programs. And of course, we have MOUs with Japanese International Cooperation Agency to ensure that there is monitoring and evaluation. In terms of the systems support initiatives, we have these initiatives where we have a systems monitoring tool which has specific elements, which I won't get into all the details with, that ensure that there is organizational systems in place, specifically with commitment planning, implementation and documentation and monitoring and evaluation. These on organizational system support initiatives, there is also the generic implementation plan that government departments can use to implement and to customize to their own departments, and cost, and of course there is a communication toolkit to help us to communicate our policies. The governance initiatives, as indicated, is what we are doing together as the DPSA through the IDC nationally, the Interdepartmental Committee, and the Interdepartmental Committee at the provincial level to coordinate our work and to communicate our policies. And the economic and developmental initiatives, as indicated, has to do with the fact that as the DPSA with the focal department at SADC on mainstreaming of HIV and AIDS, and our minister is the same at the AU. And in that regard, we have a series of whole lot of mainstreaming projects that we are doing with line departments, and I won't go through all of them in the interest of time. Suffice to say that they are in all other departments and not just in our cluster, where we are guiding different departments to mainstream into each and every one of those, including environmental impact assessments, free trade agreement, and correctional facilities and others. In terms of the achievements, we have a total of about 528 people who have been trained on mainstreaming of HIV and AIDS in partnership with the University of Pretoria and Palama. We are also now working as part of our responsibility at the SADC. We've been given a task to develop a guidelines on simultaneous mainstreaming of HIV, gender, and human rights so that we can be able to address all of those. We have developed a concept and consulted on it, and of course we have working on mandating process so that we can consult externally. We are, with these guidelines, going to come up with specific implementation guides or workshop material, and at a later stage, Palama will develop curricula to ensure that this is implemented. And this is where I'm going to head over to my colleague to present on the gender mainstreaming part.
Thank you, Dr. Sanabe. Good morning, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Bunny Subedar, and thank you once again for giving Palama an opportunity to present our gender mainstreaming program to you. In terms of the background to this program, the slide that you see gives the backdrop to what informed our programs, and it shows which gender policies and frameworks our program is aligned to. All of these constitutional and legislative frameworks shape the development of the program. And the constitutional and legislative frameworks set the scene for the transformation of human rights, and achieving gender equality is a fundamental tenet under the Bill of Rights in the Constitution. Our approach to our program, therefore, espouses the values in the Constitution, and it adopts a human rights-based approach. In the main, the content of the course came from the then Office on the Status of Women, and they handed over to the then SAMD for the content to be developed into a training manual. We then, Palama then facilitated the drafting of a unit standard for gender mainstreaming, and this was done by inviting gender practitioners from throughout South Africa to design the unit standard, which was then posted in the Government Gazette for public comment. The curriculum framework, which is like a blueprint for the drafting of the curriculum, was then widely consulted with all the gender stakeholders, including the Office on the Status of Women, DPSA, and the Public Service Commission. And then Palama then finalized a four-day accredited gender mainstreaming training program that was approved by the PCETA. And CEDA, the Canadian CEDA, provided funding for this. In terms of achievements, to date, we have trained a total of 2,221 managers in all spheres of government, including 140 senior managers trained at the Department of Justice. Last week and the previous week, we trained 67 trainers from Southern Sudan, Burundi, and Rwanda, and we hope that they will roll out training in their countries. The course speaks strongly to men and women. In fact, 25% of our participants are men. And the core message is that we need to analyze both the needs and concerns of women and men. We need to look at issues that affect men and women. And this also debunks the myth that gender is only about advancing women and women's rights. So the course is quite popular amongst men. Another achievement is that we didn't take a manual or a training program from another country. This is homegrown. And unlike other very academically inclined training manuals, this is a how-to manual with toolkits. It includes the DPSA 8-point plan, as well as the protocols and conventions that South Africa is signatory to, like the Beijing Platform of Action, SADOR, the SADC Protocol on Gender and Development. Now, I want to go back to Dr. Sanabe's presentation. As I mentioned earlier, we adopt a human rights-based and an inclusive approach to mainstreaming. This includes the mainstreaming of HIV/AIDS, issues of disability. We presented our program to India and to Zimbabwe, and we've learned a lot from other countries. And in our interactions with other countries, we learned that the approach that is being adopted is an integrated approach to the mainstreaming of gender, HIV/AIDS, human rights, and issues of disability. So we've adopted this inclusive approach, and intersectionality or cross-cutting themes like gender, race, sexual orientation, age, disability are amplified in our case studies. The voices that are presented in the case studies reflect diversity, and it encourages our learners to reflect on these in the spirit of the constitutional values of freedom, dignity, and equality. We've also developed guidelines for developing inclusive learning materials, and this is available on the Palama website, and we have disseminated this widely in Portuguese, in Malayalam, which is an Indian language, and we've disseminated these to all institutions in South Africa, universities and training academies that design and develop materials. So it's proven to be hugely popular. We've also, what makes our program unique is, unlike other mainstreaming training programs, we have an awareness component, because we feel unless managers have a personal commitment to mainstreaming gender, it's going to be difficult for them to buy into this and implement. Another unique aspect of the program is that we adopt a blended approach. So it's not only face-to-face training. We've established a virtual discussion forum, which is almost like a Facebook for gender mainstreaming, and this facilitates dialogue and debate around issues of gender. We found that the application of knowledge in the workplace is proving to be quite challenging, and the reality is that most managers, when they come for a four-day training program, within a month, they forget most of what was learnt in the classroom. So a lot of learning happens in the workplace, and we were cognizant of this and decided that we need to design our program so that it's more than just a training program. We've ensured that this is an ongoing learning program, and we've made provision for this. Our program looks at mainstreaming in programs and projects as well as within the institution. Our case study...
Apologies, can I open it? We'll need just some up because we want to focus particularly on MDGs,
okay.
As I indicated.
Okay.
Let's not really elaborate on the program because
okay.
We still have a lot of other inputs to come. Perhaps you might have another time if you want to really elaborate on the gender program.
Okay, my apologies. And I'd just like to say that my parting shot will be, I'm glad that the Statistician General is here, because we'd like to throw a challenge to you, Statistician General. We think that key to mainstreaming is the collection of sex disaggregated data, and we would love to have the opportunity to bring our training program to your department. And I'd like to pause there. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I think I'm not going to say much, but just to indicate from our side in terms of the work that has been done, there's been a lot that has been done in following around, in following up in terms of the MDGs, in particular the focus being the public service and administration, and particularly around mainstreaming. And I'm not going to repeat all of that. If you look at slide 4, it gives you a clear indication of exactly how HIV and AIDS and TB management and simultaneous mainstreaming in the public service is taking place and fully integrated into almost every single activity that is happening across the public service. And let me leave it at that and maybe deal with questions and answers that may come up. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Okay, thanks to the presentation. And thanks, Bani. Remember that we have the details of the presentation as the committee, because we've been interacting with you quite a lot. So at this point in time, most of the details we do have. But safe to indicate that based on DPSA's Parliament program, there is a program that will be rolled up with Parliament of mainstreaming. That is, they're putting it through to programming in Parliament so that it can pull all other members, and therefore all is in due course in terms of the progress, and want to proceed that interaction because you've been responsive quite appropriate. Okay, we did have this the presentation as a requirement to a follow-up on governance and administration cluster, honourable members. And it had been put through. Thanks, Dr. Can I take the hands? I think Honorable Dres hand is up, and followed by Honorable Williams. Was the hand up, Honorable Mal? No. Okay. Let's take the two hands first. Honorable Dreyer?
Madam Chair, I've just got one question for clarity. On the achievement on the training on mainstreaming of HIV and AIDS, there's a column there, financial year, and then the number of government employees trained. I just want to be able to put these figures into context. This is what it looks like, that slide. I just want to be able to put it into context. Number of employees trained. Are these employees that are supposed to train others, or is this just for their own enrichment and for their own information? Because 528 in total over since 2007 until now, I don't know. Is it few that many out of how many that are supposed to be trained? If all officials in the public service are supposed to be exposed to this training so that there's awareness across the board, I mean, then this is nothing. Then this is absolutely a drop in the ocean. So I'd just like clarity on that figure, on that table.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to refer to slide 4, bullet 5, which says within their workplaces, and also slide 8, bullet 3, sub-bullet 3, which talks to NEDLAC. I'd like to know how effective is this engagement with NEDLAC, and does the Department in Palama engage directly with labor organized labor? In other words, does Nahawu, for instance, feel consulted on the implementation of both the HIV, AIDS, and TB management and the gender mainstreaming? And also, is there a program to train shop stewards in this? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Suka.
Thank you, Chairperson. I appreciate this presentation by both presenters. At least they schooled us or the educators gradually. Chairperson, I just want to check the linkage of the APRM report last night that was on TV, where we seem to be sliding a little bit backward in as far as this report is. How is it linked to that, and how do you rectify that? Is there any comment on the report that you saw last night, and in what you are doing? Seemingly, you are making strides, because surely there is a discourse in what I'm saying in relation to what you are presenting. Secondly, Chairperson, I must also appreciate the curriculum that Palama is having. Maybe what we should advise on questions also is that your advocacy program should be more vigorous or dynamic, because there are areas where it is not reaching, and as such, I think you need to develop more strategies and have some close cooperation and linkages with other communication agencies to take the message much more forward and a bit faster to that. Chairperson, on page, I think it's 15, I was trying to catch up very fast on what has been presented, but I'm also very impressed. My question has been covered when it comes to statistics. This 528 is not really that much, because if you include your provinces, or if you include the three spheres of government in relation to your workforce or the public service. So I'm saying it's not that much impressive. If you can step up a little bit on this one, because time is running out. Thank you, Chairperson.
Maybe before you respond, Acting DG, just to assist them on the African peer review, a question that you asked, because they might have not seen the TV yesterday, and also maybe is there a particular issue that you're looking for, Honorable Suka? But also safe to indicate that on the African peer review mechanism, we've also aligned the presentation by their minister as well, that will cover the areas that we've also identified ourselves as a committee. So, but if maybe there's a particular issue that you really wanted to get clear, let's zoom into that so that we assist them to understand what is it that you're referring to when you draw the relation between MDGs and that APRM report.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think it relates to the progress that the country that is making in fighting HIV and AIDS.
Yeah, you can proceed.
Madam Chair, I just want to indicate also Dr. Sipho Senabe is the focal point for South Africa in terms of reporting on HIV and AIDS, so he'll respond to that issue around HIV and AIDS. He represents the the country and the minister, both at SADC level as well as internationally. So he'd be able to respond adequately to the issue around AIDS and particularly APRM reporting. I think from the brief report I got in relation to that, to the program last night, it seems it was very one-sided in its approach. And I know the APRM and the work we had done was quite extensive in developing that particular report. But coming back to the specific questions, on page 15, that number of 528 trained over that period, it was a train-the-trainer program. Even Palama officials were trained as future trainers in terms of taking it forward. But I think what we'll need to do is disaggregate it further and see how many of these people have gone on to do further training and look at the numbers from there. Madam Speaker, the second question raised is around the engagement with labor. Yes, we've had extensive engagement with labor. The entire diversity management, employee health and wellness issues, including HIV, AIDS, gender, race, disability, was dealt with last year in the public service sector summit that was held in September last year. And a number of resolutions were adopted at that particular summit that helped us to craft a number of these things. I must indicate, though, at NEDLAC level, it's simply reporting. We've not had extensive engagement at the NEDLAC level in a number of these things. I'm going to ask both Ms. Subedar to deal with the training and the advocacy in relation to Palama, and Dr. Sanabe can deal with the issues around HIV/AIDS. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Acting DG. I think that was a point for noting, so I'm going to take that back to Palama. We need to beef up in terms of advocacy, and we have a newly revamped marketing unit, so we are going to engage with that more intensively. And thank you for your suggestion.
Thank you, DG. The question on the slide 15 on the number of people trained, just to say that the target was actually 400 for the period of the financial years 2007 to 2008 until 2009-2010. So we have exceeded that specific target. And it, as indicated, it was a train-the-trainer type of training. With regard to the issues of the APRM and the linkages, APRM is a governance framework, and one of the things that our minister is supposed to be reporting on as a cross-cutting issue is HIV and AIDS, and the requirement is that those of us who are involved in the management of HIV and AIDS should be reporting on a quarterly basis to the office of the minister so that the minister on an annual basis can have a country report. That is the link. And then at NEDLAC, I think as the acting DG was saying, it was more of reporting and also consulting on the process of development of the ILO recommendation on HIV and AIDS in the world of work, where as different stakeholders, government, labor, business, and civil society, we had to consolidate our country inputs through that NEDLAC process. So it was really reporting and consultation at that level. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Maybe just to sum up in conclusion that matter. Honorable members, is there anything that you need to do? But I want to motivate that we move on based on the tagline. But just to summarize and close and say to the public service and administration, only if we consider that Parliament has adopted the study tour report that was taken by a collaboration between the public service and administration and committee together with COCTA to Indonesia and Ghana, and we know part of it is the issue of the Palama Indaba, where we're looking at the consolidation of all education stakeholders in the country, and therefore the sooner we're able to start to discuss that and put time frames, when is it going to take place, in order for us to have an envisaged Palama, that can really assist us a lot, because that commitment within the Parliament has already taken on board all issues that were recommendations of the study tour report, and therefore I must indicate that the next engagement should be largely on that in terms of how then do we move forward in terms of the Palama Indaba. And then the other issue is the issue of the training programs. Like I indicated, the training programs of gender mainstreaming are already getting into the programming of Parliament, together with the sign language, gender mainstreaming and sign language. as a mainstream training that is going to take place. And therefore, I know that everything has been submitted from the side of Palama in terms of gender mainstreaming. Some languages, I'm not very sure. We haven't, but I know they're ready. And therefore, we will get feedback in terms of dates and the model committees that are going to embark on the training. It's the Women's Caucus together with Public Safety and Administration as a starter. The rest are going to be rolled out, and those are going to be standing programs. The rest of other programs will still discuss and engage on governance, project management, financial management. And thank you very much. And then, if I'm allowed, let's quickly take another presentation. We can only take a break once this progress. You know, because we are many, it's best for us to really move on and make sure that we utilize the time. And next on our agenda, which was the first presentation, which was required, now second. We have a briefing on justice and constitutional development on the peace and stability cluster implementation on the Millennium Development Goals. And my apologies, the Deputy Minister did join us for rural development. He's with me here today. I don't know why he's looking at me like that, but that's Honorable Tulas Mwesi. Surely I can't be intimidated. Okay. Now we're going to have the presentation on the constitutional development, on the peace and stability cluster, on the MDGs. If the presentation, I can see, is already on, can I then request, like we did, introduction of everyone else? I don't know whether it's the Deputy Minister here. I would wish that the person who was leading the delegation proceeds that way, and then they will actually take us on board. Deputy Minister, how do you want it to take place? Okay, the next item.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Nonkululeko Sindan. I'm the Director General for the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, and I am here, though, as the chairperson of the JCPS cluster. I have a colleague of mine who is also a cluster member who happens to also be a chairperson of the Social Protection Cluster, Mr. Vusma Donzai. And then I am supported by Mr. Lungisile Phakathi, who's sitting somewhere there. I apologize, Chair. Our presentation, Chair, is going to be quite short, but the detail that we've provided in the slides are somewhat comprehensive, reason being that we have not presented here before, so we did not know how much information is required. Secondly, excuse me, on the issue of the targets, whether we are meeting them, the measures that are provided for, I do think, Chair, that we must put this before the meeting even considers our presentation, that as the JCPS cluster, our contribution to the Millennium Development Goals is a very generic one, primarily provided for already by the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, but secondly, coming from the government's medium-term strategic framework, and so this is how we followed our approach. So in terms of the measurability, of when you put in place the law, the measurability of that, we rely very much on the Statistician General and how the Statistician General is the overall guardian of providing the report will assist us with that as we move forward. Thank you. The presentation will cover in broad terms what we provide as our delivery agreement as a JCPS cluster, which was signed in October of 2010. We've taken the Millennium Development Goals as we understand it. They were already infused in the medium-term strategic framework, and therefore we proceed with our business as usual on the understanding that they are already there. We have, as government, developed a reporting framework in terms of which we report on a quarterly basis our progress. So the numbers that may appear here are not necessarily numbers of what we've been doing since the Millennium Development Goals started, but it is just the numbers that we reported on for the 2010-2011 financial year. This was particularly the case given the fact that the reports, the country reports on the Millennium Development Goals was prepared in 2010, so we didn't want to re-report on information prior to that. I am not going to remind the meeting of what the Millennium Development Goals are, but what we've done is we've provided those goals in our presentation. I would, however, wish to focus on the ones that we think we play a more strategic goal towards their achievement. Goal number one is eradication of extreme poverty as well as hunger, as well as the goal relating to the achievement of universal primary education. The third one, promote the promotion of gender equality as well as empowerment of women. We believe we contribute more directly to these goals, even though in an indirect way. The last goal in terms of the development of a global partnership for development, we also believe as a cluster we play a very fundamental role there together with the ICTS cluster. I will just perhaps indicate two things in this slide, that in terms of our strategic framework as government, the medium-term strategic framework, government adopted a holistic approach on the performance and in how the clusters were structured. So basically, that slide indicates how the clusters were structured in terms of the 12 outcomes, and the one that is written in dark black represents the JCPS cluster, and our responsibility or our outcome is ensuring that all people in South Africa are and feel safe. Again, without going into detail there, the focus really is MDG 1, eradication of extreme poverty, the promotion of gender equality and empowerment of women, ensuring environmental sustainability as well as development of a global partnership for development. We've made significant progress, and yes, it's important for me to pause and indicate who are members of the JCPS cluster, because I haven't done that before. Members of the JCPS cluster constitute, amongst others, and they are provided for in slide 5. They constitute, amongst others, the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, Correctional Services, SAP, DCS, which is Correctional Services, and then Social Development, the Receiver of Revenue, which we know is SARS, National Treasury. Now, at least we have an additional member, which is the Department of Communications. I almost forgot, the Department of Home Affairs. So those are the departments that are responsible for the JCPS cluster, as well as defense, by the way. So we provide for the security of the country, basically, in a nutshell. So we just want to indicate under this slide the direct link that we provide in terms of providing security in relation of the country and the achievement of the eradication of extreme poverty as well as hunger. In terms of in South Africa right now, we have quite a variety of problems, but the key problem is poverty, really, as well as naturally crime. That poverty is primarily focused and concentrated in rural areas as well as in townships. Not that it doesn't happen in urban areas, but that's where it is more intense. We believe that a proper functional criminal justice system, and we call it a criminal justice system because we look at it as a value chain from police to justice to prosecution to correctional services to social development, the whole value chain. We believe that we have to have a functional criminal justice system which will enable us to protect South Africans so that people go on doing their daily business on a day-to-day basis, going to work and doing those things that they should do. If it functions well, we should be able, amongst others, to eradicate poverty and ensure that the resources that go towards all of these initiatives are reallocated and allocated into areas that need investment. We do this through a variety of reasons, of systems. Amongst others, we rely on IT systems because we believe in the value chain, you have to have a proper system that communicates throughout the value chain. This is what our main focus is going to be for 2011-2012 financial year. We started with the IJS program, which is the criminal justice systems, but our focus this year is going to be that much more because our systems are not coordinated and integrated at this stage in the manner that we would want them to be. Now, let me just quickly illustrate what I mean. What I mean is that when a person gets to a police station, we should have a system that tracks that person from a police station to the court, to the prosecution, to the correctional services, to to social development programs, out into the community once they are reintegrated back into community. We do not have those systems that talk in that way. We do have individual systems, but they do not talk, and that integration, we believe, is very critical. And I won't also indicate where we are already piloting and where things are working, because I think that information is already contained in the report. I just wanted to illustrate to that point. In addition to using systems, we are also just using our departmental programs which are linked to the cluster to alleviate poverty. One of those programs that we run extensively in the Department of Justice is maintenance, the maintenance program. Now, maintenance program, in terms of the department, we are training a lot of people as maintenance officers. We have maintenance officers, maintenance prosecutors, investigators, and all those types of people, as well as maintenance courts that we operate. We are currently also operating additional maintenance courts, which people are doing on a voluntary basis to ensure that we do not have backlogs in areas of maintenance. How we contribute using this instrument or tool of maintenance towards MDGs, especially towards the eradication of extreme poverty and hunger, is the monies we pay on a weekly, monthly, and annual basis to those children who require maintenance for them to be able to go and access education, primarily primary education, is just unbelievable. In terms of numbers transactions that we deal with on a monthly basis, on average, we deal with 251,000 maintenance beneficiaries on a month-on-month basis. Sometimes it's more, of course, and sometimes it's less. And in terms of money that we disperse on a monthly basis, we disperse in excess of 155 or so million per month. We sit with at least 7 billion in our account, which we disperse on a month-on-month basis. So you can understand that if we were doing our work efficiently as we would want us to do, we should be able to reach more South Africans and more children than should be at school because they will not have these financial limitations that they have. But please understand that maintenance money is not government money, and I really have to stress this. Maintenance money is money that is paid by the parents of those children, but is paid through a legal system, through a court system, because of whatever reason that may have happened. So we are not doing social development work. I just thought it's important that I clarify that. The next point that I wanted to talk about relates to the master's services that we provide. You will know that in South Africa, for every child that does not have a natural or legal guardian, the master of the High Court becomes the guardian, the legal guardian of that child. Now, there are, because of many reasons where you have child-headed families, our direct contribution under these circumstances is ensuring that the master services work properly so that those child-headed families, those children who may potentially have an estate claim, are assisted. We are able to assist them in good time so that they can access their monies in good time and so that, again, they can get an education and health services and so on and so on. And these services, we've singled out here, we deal with major estates, and we're not going to talk about those today. We're just focusing on those estates that are very, very small, because these are the estates where the poorest of the poor are sitting. It's within a range of 50,000 to 125,000. And it's those estates where children would ordinarily need money. And so we are finalizing those as quickly as we are able to. And I must also indicate that Legal Aid South Africa has come to the party for the first time in our history, that we are now working with Legal Aid South Africa to ensure that they represent these children, particularly the child-headed families, to represent them in terms of getting their access to the estates as quickly as possible and not have to wait forever. We have specific statistics. You will see those in our annual reports when we report, which we are just about concluding right now. We also play a very direct role in terms of the promotion of gender equality as well as the empowerment of women. Okay. You will know that we already have legislation that came into effect in 2000, and it's called Promotion of Equality and Prevention of Unfair Discrimination Act, number 4 of 2000. Amongst others, this piece of legislation is a very critical piece of legislation that we have in terms of our constitution, because for the first time it sought to bring parity between women and men in South Africa. But we did not end there. We then created a number of equality courts, which are not just dealing with gender, but are also dealing with other forms of racism. And these equality courts are accessed by everybody throughout the country. And of course, those of us who listen to the media and read papers will know that in recent times, these courts have been very useful and made very telling decisions. And we believe in our view that the mainstreaming, therefore, of the promotion of gender equality as well as empowerment of women is very much ensured through the existence of the legislation, of the constitution, as well as the programs that we are doing. We do train as well, but we are not providing the training that is provided by Palama, but we more train on substance, on issues of law. What do you do under what circumstances? We've created a number of manuals to ensure that women are able to access gender equality courts. In fact, I must say it does appear in the presentation that every magistrate's court in South Africa has now been declared an equality court, and therefore people are able to access them, because we generally have more magistrates' courts than any other courts in South Africa, and we view that as a direct contribution to the MDGs. Is it measurable, Statistician General? I wouldn't say so, but it provides a proper framework for us to move forward as a country. I think I won't cover all those issues, save perhaps just to focus on the point that talks about the LGBTIs, which are lesbians, gays, bisexuals, transsexuals, as well as intersex communities. You would have seen in the media that there has been a whole lot of noise with this particular category of our community. We wouldn't wish to stigmatize people and categorize people and all of that, but I do think that there is a need for us to look at this category of people more closely, because they do feel that they do not have absolute access in the manner that every other person has in South Africa in terms of justice. And we are engaging with them. Members will know that the Department of Justice is currently in talks with them, that there is a task team with the non-governmental organizations as well as community-based organizations to look at them and to make representations for some policy framework that we'll continue to implement. But I have to hasten to also add that it doesn't mean that, for instance, because the media focus in the recent past has been more on the issues of rape, it doesn't mean that on the issues of rape they are not catered for. We have the criminal law, which deals with Sexual Amendment Act, which deals with issues of rape, and it caters for everybody, men and women alike, who are raped. Equally, the LGBTIs, but the debate has been whether you have to go a step further and introduce an element which is called hate crime insofar as the LGBTIs are concerned, and that's what I just wanted to emphasize on that slide. Part of just ensuring that we provide security to women and promoting gender equality as well as the empowerment of women, but focusing more now on the empowerment of women, is that we have, as a JCPS cluster, we have a number of programs that are aimed at providing combat, which we call victim empowerment programs, that, amongst others, assist those who find themselves as victims of whatever system, particularly victims of violence in the family. And we've provided, as I've indicated, a number of systems, and this slide seeks to deal with that, but without going into the details of that, I just would like to focus on two areas of that slide: the maximization of the participation of communities and civil society organizations on the issues of victimization, as well as the reduction, the work that we do in reducing the risk of becoming a victim, and in general, your broader community safety. The JCPS cluster is currently finalizing the community safety forum strategy, which is driven by the ICD in the police. But that strategy is also supported by the social crime prevention strategy, which is largely driven by the Department of Social Development. And the two strategies, in our view, will work very well in ensuring that we create an environment where of reduced risk for potential victims. Because those are, we must understand that in South Africa, we can't always fight crime. There are certain things that must happen everywhere else before you get to a point where you deal with courts and police and all of those things. And we are saying these strategies are aimed at ensuring that we prevent crime everywhere else before you get to absolutely the position where you have to go to court. Now, in terms of that, we provide for other institutions, for instance, firstly, we adopt a zero tolerance towards crime. But where you've experienced crime, especially for women, there are Tutuzela care centers. I'll talk about that a little more later in the presentation. There are Tutuzela care centers that are run currently by NPA, that a victim of rape can go there and be comforted almost immediately, seen by the doctor, seen by the investigating officer, test taken, and so on and so on. We've got a whole range of those in the country. I think right now we are standing at 27 in the country. But we also have certain facilities that are run by social development. In courts, we have, at this stage, a number of our courts are victim-friendly. We would want all of them to be victim-friendly, but we are not there, and won't be there probably for the duration of the strategic framework, but that's what we are working towards. As well as the police, most police stations today are more victim-friendly than they were since these programs started. I know in 2010 the police had 900 police stations that were already victim-friendly. And the target that I think the police have this year, if I'm not mistaken, is probably around 1,200 and some odd. So it's just the progress we are making as a JCPS cluster to ensure that we prevent people from being victims in the first place, but when and if they should become victims, there are systems, there are safety nets that we provide to ensure that you do not continue to be a victim beyond that. Also, we believe that as we do that, the justice, the totality of the justice system must also be victim-sensitive and not expose people to further victimization. And I know know I've passed that slide now, but I would like to just indicate that half the problem of cases not being reported is the fear of further victimization, and the initiatives we are putting in place are aimed at ensuring that we do not further victimize people in the system, in the process. The next MDG is MDG 7, ensuring environmental sustainability. We, of course, are responsible for the development of law. You will also know that there are a number of environmental courts throughout the country to deal with environmental cases. And I think my minister is the responsible for the environmental courts at this stage in terms of, I think, a cabinet decision. So amongst others, as a cluster, we also play specific policing role on issues of environment. Of course, we work with partners in your water affairs, as well as, oh my God, I forgot the department's name. Yes, environmental affairs. Okay, but other things that we do, we have a specific program now that deals with illegal mining. In fact, there are reports that have been prepared for cabinet on illegal mining. We have other programs that deal with environmental protection. As I had indicated, we have specialized environmental courts. And perhaps it's important to understand why specialized environmental courts. An environmental violation generally continues for a very long time, and you need to be seized with it quite specifically within a reasonable time. And that is why those courts were set up. Chair, I'm not sure how much time I have. I can finish now. Okay, all right. Thank you, Chair. That's fine. Thank you very much. I won't deal with the details of this. Safe to say that we will always, as the JCPS cluster, sing our praises in terms of our performance during the 2010 FIFA World Cup. I still think that it was the best show ever in terms of the security of the event. I won't go through those details of what it is that we do, but maybe just for members who are not quite familiar with what we do as a JCPS cluster, we'll only cover the outcomes. I won't go through each outcome. We have 8 outcomes, and let me just read them out quickly. The reduced overall levels of serious crime, in particular contact and trio crimes. We want to have an effective justice system, which I've already spoken about. We want to eradicate corruption within the JCPS cluster. We want to also manage the perception that crime is growing. In fact, we want to give a different perception that crime is reducing. And in fact, if you look at our presentation, you will see that crime is reducing. But of course, as long as we feel crime, those who still are affected by crime do not feel that it's reducing. But statistics is beginning to show that crime is indeed reducing, not in all areas, but in some areas. I think our biggest challenge right now, which we are facing head on, is on output 6, which deals with effective border management, the safeguarding of effective border management and effective border management. Again, there we have a whole range of departments: Home Affairs, SARS, the police, defense, protecting our borders now as well as protecting our border lines, and they are working very well together at this stage. But certainly, I think that's an area that is going to continue to be a challenge for a reasonable period of time. Integrity of identity and status of citizens and residents in South Africa secured. I don't have to speak to that. The Department of Home Affairs has been on the media since the whole of last year, in fact, talking about these issues, so I won't speak to that. It's also contained in our presentation. ICT systems integrated and cybercrime combated. You will know that cybercrime is a growing trend in the world, not just in South Africa. We are positioning ourselves as the cluster to deal decisively and effectively with this, both at systems level as well as at protocol level. And the JCPS cluster is leading this under the Department of Communications as well as State Security. Oh, by the way, State Security is also the member of our cluster. I am now not going to go through each of these because these are then cluster-related performance, Chair, but they are very detailed in the presentation. I would probably just like to indicate one thing, that where we talk about backlogs in courts or case finalization, we remain having a challenge as a cluster because we do not separate in reporting that this case is a case related to a woman or this case is a case related to a particular category of person. We just deal with cases in the criminal justice system. The only time that we distinguish is cases relating to children, because there's a separate criminal justice system for children that came into effect on the 1st of April 2010. In relation to issues of partnerships that we spoke to, as I think it's the last Millennium Development Goals, the JCPS cluster in itself is already a partnership, but there are many other partnerships that we are partners with. We partner with the European Union, we partner with the Swiss in building a whole range of small claims courts for access to justice, for training and all of those things. And the police have various partnerships as well. We are comfortable that those partnerships are assisting us, but we are also assisting other countries in fighting crime, both in South Africa as well as in the continent. Critical is also partnerships between ourselves as a cluster, because for us to work effectively, we've got to have meaningful partnerships. Other than that, Chair, I don't think I need to deal with the details. I would like just to, one challenge, we have many, but I took most of them out, and I just said the one challenge that we really need to start thinking about, it won't happen this year, probably next year as well, is how do we segment reporting, which will assist when we collect statistics for the purposes of reporting in terms of the MDGs. I am sure the Statistician General will say that it was a huge challenge to pull the report together. If we can make this better, I think that's the area that we must focus ourselves to in ensuring that we achieve that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. That is DG Nonkululeko Sindani. She's a DG for Justice and Constitutional Development, and she was reporting on the Peace and Stability Cluster. Thanks, DG. Honorable members, that is a report. Like she's indicating, you can see there's quite a lot. It's packed. Which actually, to me, you know, maybe we can't look at it and we'll have some recommendations, but at this point in time, let us engage with the report. If members have specific areas that they want to really ask or engage with, we can do that, starting with Honorable Williams.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to refer to slide 27. It talks on the ITC systems. And it talks there under point one that there are delays in various systems. I'm assuming that's also including the reporting system. I'd like to know what is CETA assisting, and how effective is CETA in this regard? Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Taya?
Madam Chair, very simple question. What is true crime level? You talk about specific focus on reducing contact and true crime levels. I have no idea what that is.
Honorable Mohali.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've heard talk about victim-friendly courts and victim-friendly police station. What is that? How do you measure this friendliness that is at the cause, and at because these are victims. are they the ones who are measuring the friendliness, or how do you measure this? And the other thing, my question is on the systems in maintenance, because I've had improvement on maintenance and so on. Do you have a system where you are able to capture if one child is being paid for maintenance by two parents? Thank you.
Honorable Suka.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine, I must also appreciate this presentation, and I think that there's more information. I wish that there's more time to interact with it. But my only request, Chairperson, is that I think we need to scan the entire South Africa, especially in the rural and small towns. I would want to hope that it is not only emphasizing on the urban areas, because South Africa is categorized in many ways in terms of its build-up, its geographic spread. And as such, there are those small towns that are not yet at that level where you'd want to be in terms of reporting, assisting as a cluster. The constitutional development or the judiciary might do its work, but at one level, the police might not be so much quick and effective in apprehending and bringing those cases to the fore. If you look at the rural, small, the Karoo, let me talk of Karoo, and farm areas where they are very far from these areas to report these cases. So I wish that we can work very hard in bringing those issues closer to where people live. I don't want to make an example, but I can do that at an opportune time based on my experience in the rural areas, in fact, in the small towns where my constituency is. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Members. Missing that. Apologies. There's an Honorable Member who was not introduced, Honorable Maluleka. You proceed, Honorable Maluleka.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I wanted to check that what are their plans in terms of addressing the backlog of foster care grant due to the issues of courts? Because they said, like in Muritira, they only address 10 cases per month. So there is a backlog in the issue of foster care grant in terms of the courts. Thank you, Chair.
Yes, thanks, Honorable Member. There's another hiding, Honorable Member. Honorable Ramatlakane, you can proceed.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. It's just a follow-up question on the maintenance payment. Mine is just a question of tracking system. Do we have established a proper tracking system of defaulters? For an example, I see there's millions that is paid every month, but the tracking system will ensure that there is defaulters that are probably not making the payment and follow up. I'm just checking whether that system already exists.
Okay. Thanks, Honorable Members. Addition, Honorable Mohale.
Still on the maintenance part. Do we have a stage where we would say, no, the parent is no longer going to pay for maintenance for this child? Thank you.
Honorable Bushefo.
I just wanted to know, what are they doing to prevent children? Because in the rural areas, this thing of ukuthwala is still in practice. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Bishop.
Thank you, Chairperson and Honorable Members. We, on the first question of CETA assistance, integration systems, and all of that, CETA is going through its own transformation right now. I think they've got the whole management team, new CEO and team and everybody else. we as a cluster have met with them as FOSAD in government, but also I personally as the DG of Justice have met with the CEO and his team to go through specific areas. We've developed a new program of managing both the Department of Justice's ICMS system as well as the cluster system. So indeed, yes, CITA is coming to a party. Even the systems that we have, which I say at this stage are somewhat fragmented, we have been working with CITA in developing those. We just need to work with better speed and better partnership and collaboration in ensuring that they work throughout the system. Trio crime levels. Trio crimes, maybe I need to just indicate what they are. Trio crimes are those crimes that are not contact crimes. Contact crimes will relate to rape, murder, and the like. Trio crimes will relate to housebreaking, hijackings, and the like. So those are trio crimes. Robberies, bank robberies, home housebreakings. Those are the types of crimes that are regarded as trio crimes. In fact, bank robberies, you will know, honorable members, that in last year's police statistics, I don't have them at the top of my head, that came down by 50% on bank robberies. House robberies, however, grew last year, well, in the last statistics that the police issued, and we are tracking that. But you will also appreciate that we, during in year, we can't report on the police statistics. They only release the statistics once. So we will know at the end of the year when they release their statistics how we are doing. But I can assure you, house robberies and big hijackings came down significantly last year. Banks were at least about 50%. So that's the point there. What are victim-friendly facilities and at whose perspective are they victim-friendly? Victim-friendly facilities, the definition we are using is aimed at if you have suffered an injustice, like hypothetically if you have been raped or a victim of domestic violence. We provide specific facilities. I did say we have targets, and I did say in police stations at least 900 police stations, and you know how many more in the country are there police stations. But we will make progress towards making them all victim friendly. What does that mean? It means you go into a police station, there is a small cubicle where you are interacted with instead of standing at the charge office, they call it charge office, and get asked in the presence of everybody about what happened to you. So those we call victim-friendly facilities. If a child is a victim of sexual abuse or any other abuse, we have many facilities. But one of those facilities is called your audiovisual facility. So some courts already have audiovisual facilities where a child is sitting behind the glass wall and explaining whatever it is that they are explaining. And I can give you an example of the ones I have been to in the Teddy Bear Clinic. We use that as one of our victim-friendly facilities where a child is given toys and everything else. Actually, if you go there, the facility looks absolutely, absolutely beautiful. There's one at Mlazi. There are many throughout the country. It's just that we have to know where those facilities are. The ideal environment is to have them throughout the country. Of course, that takes time and that takes a lot of budget. But again, I did say our partners have assisted us a lot in creating these victim-friendly facilities, but this is a responsibility of government, and ultimately it has to come from the fiscus. The issues of maintenance system, do we have a maintenance system? Yes, indeed, we do have a maintenance system, an electronic system. There are those areas within the justice system that are still doing it manually. They are few, but they are there. But ordinarily, we now have an electronic system, and we have had it for a little while now. Does it work well to get all together every time? Certainly not every time, but it is working very well
it needs strategies to drive it. So we've been driving it differently, tweaking it differently just to achieve a particular result. I had indicated that we are doing a number of EFT payments, electronic fund transfer payments. We are doing those on a daily basis. We're doing those on a monthly basis. So we get the person's money. If we have approved the money, you get it the following day. We send you an SMS, you get it the following day. But it's not happening everywhere in the country at the same rate at the same time. And that's what we are progressing towards as we move forward. But where we don't have that system going and where we are paying manually, you will see in the presentation, we are saying we are training more maintenance officers, more maintenance investigators to ensure that we facilitate the actual check payments and delivery of money to the beneficiaries of maintenance. System of payment of maintenance by two parents. I am not aware. I would be telling, stretching the truth, but let me think with you on this one. If there is one case and you have two parents, it will be treated as one, so that you will not then track it as two cases. I wouldn't imagine under what circumstances, but it's quite possible. But if you have two, ordinarily, if a child has a claim, because any child has a claim against both parents, if a child has a claim against parent A and parent B, in other words, the father and the mother, and they are both not supporting it, ordinarily, I think you will then have two separate cases where the child will proceed against the mother and the child will proceed against the father. I don't think it will be possible to combine it as one case unless it's both parents who are living together neglecting a child. Under those circumstances, it will then be treated as one case. Otherwise, I would like to engage offline outside this meeting.
Yes, I'm a bit worried about time, yeah. Let's just...
Okay. My understanding is that a child can only have one father and potentially a guardian and something else. And I would like to engage on this outside check.
Okay, maybe what the Honourable Member was trying to indicate, there are people who will claim both sides, claim that,
for the same
for
child.
For the sake of, yes.
Oh,
that's part
okay.
of a criminal activity.
Oh,
that's
okay.
what the member is trying to
say. Okay, let me give, it won't be a maintenance system that will help us track that, but it will be it's called an AFIS system. It's a home affairs system, which tracks the identity of the child. In other words, anyone who gets a birth certificate will have an identity number. For a minute, let's not think fraud and corruption and whether this was issued fraudulently or otherwise, but ordinarily a child must have one ID, in other words, one birth certificate, so you can then have a child who has many, many fathers. But Minister Dlamini Zuma did say in one of her speeches that it does happen that people get used in buying the identity documents and changing, like the marriages, you know, these arranged scammed marriages, they do also do that with selling children in that way. You also have that, but that is a fraud part which I'm not talking about here today. But for the purposes of tracking, we will have to think on how to deal with that, and I'll probably touch base outside the meeting. Foster care, small towns. Where the reporting system does not work, I would agree with you, sir. In small towns, we do have challenges, many, many challenges, but part of our strategy, if you look at the Department of Justice strategy now, not so much the JCPS cluster strategy, but just we want to do more outreach in rural areas and reach the urban areas through your other social networks and other medium of communication and go physically to these areas where we don't normally get to use technology where we can use technology so that we can unearth what is happening. But at a cluster level, I can say this with a measurable degree of comfort that we operate as a cluster, at least between the police, social development and ourselves, maybe less other members of the cluster like your SARS and them. We operate as a cluster more in those areas. We are operate differently, but we operate better in local areas, actually, than we operate anywhere else. What we have to do is where, what you are talking about is more where you lack infrastructure. Maybe the police station is there and the court is there. That is what we are busy working on in terms of making justice more accessible to the court, so that ultimately each magisterial district has a court, and that's what we are working towards. But we are not there yet, certainly. The foster care grants, particularly in Moretele, the issue around foster care grants, we work with social development and as well as the judiciary to ensure, because there was a recent legislation which made foster care grants to be renewed by the judiciary. Before, it used to be renewed by social workers from social development. But we've raised this issue. The heads of courts, under the leadership the heads of courts who are leaders in their own courts, are working with us to review those as quickly as they are able to. Do we have a backlog? Indeed, we do. Are we working towards that? Yes, definitely. The heads of course are assisting us in doing speedy reviews of those foster care grants. The Moretele issue is a specific issue. As Justice, we are running a specific project right now just to ensure that systems are working well in terms of process flow. We are doing a process flow project, just focusing specifically on maintenance, so that we are able to pick up some of those issues relating to either its foster care grants or the related issues that should not be happening but are happening, because there have been other problems in that environment. So it's one of our, if I may put it this way, prioritized courts that we will deal with. Tracking system of defaulters, at this stage, I must say, it's not working that well. What happens is that maintenance beneficiaries will have to come back to us and go back to court if there is a default. And we do experience that a lot. We are thinking about it, but it's not working well at this stage, and we would perhaps in the new year or so look at how we strengthen our capacity in that. But certainly it's not working that well at this stage. And then finally, the issue on Ugutwala. There are many initiatives that we are now doing on Ugutwala. Incidentally, it was on TV last night as well. Ugutwala, our minister firstly has indicated very specifically that Ugutwala in this day and age where it is associated with, I don't know whether there's a word called unconsensual. Non-consensual. Sexual activity and or rape if it is a child below the age of 18. It's a practice that is becoming even more prevalent, and we thought it didn't exist, but it suddenly become very, very prevalent. We are dealing in justice specifically. We have a variety of programs that are addressing the issue of Ugutwala. Secondly, anyone who does that with a child, it's a criminal offence, and we prosecute it under the Criminal Sexual Offences Act, and those that are doing it will be prosecuted absolutely. But we don't end there, so we don't take the hard stick approach only. We are also engaging, and we are very lucky in our justice portfolio. We have Ubabo Ungosi Pathekile Olomisa. We will also be engaging with the Contralesser so that we find each other on those issues and deal with them both on a social context level as well as on the legal level. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thanks. I'm sure we really need to engage quite a lot on this, but we're really pressed for time, Honourable Members. Only a banning matter. I'll take a penny, and I'll we'll sense whether it's penny or not. Honourable Williams, followed by Honourable Ramatlakane.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to talk about the last slide 31, the challenges. You talk about the systems need to be improved, and I just want to know what steps need to be taken in order to improve these systems. on your challenges on page 31.
Come again, Honorable Williams. Oh. Honorable Ramachandran.
No, thanks, Chair. A follow-up question was the DG. I wanted to understand, does this system exist? The answer that the DG is giving is that it's not working well. We are looking at it. I actually wanted to know whether we have such a system or we're in the process of developing such a system of tracking defaulters. So the answer is a little bit more diplomatic, if I'm answering, I'm getting it. But if a DG could just speak to that. And the last thing is on the slide 10. Why is the social crime prevention strategy not finalized? Here, this language used is being finalized. I'm just curious to know, because the issue of social crime prevention as a strategy it's got a long history. So why is it not finalized? And who's the lead agency on that particular front?
Yeah, okay. I missed Honorable Williams, but just to sensitize the responses that we do have term constraints. Okay, I'll allow you to do the responding.
The system in terms of challenges and what we were talking about, ensuring that we develop system that respond to how we will report and be measured at the end of the day. That is the challenge we are having. And so the meetings I was talking about between us and CITA and the police and everybody else are aimed at doing exactly that, so that when we capture information, it's captured in such a way that when at the end, for instance, Statistician General or the Auditor General audit, they will find the information. The current challenge is that is not happening. The systems are still capturing information in the old way, if I may put it that way. I was not being diplomatic, sir. I was trying to say the following. How you look at the system on your pay, if you go to the screen, you will know that Father X has deposited the money. That's how you will track then whether if someone comes to claim the money, you will know then in the system that there is money, that you have a credit in the system, or there's no money. So that is what I'm talking about when I'm saying there is a system. It's not working very well because that's not what we haven't been tracking that well and following up with the fathers and the mothers who are not paying the money. That is the point I was just trying to raise. I don't know whether that assists. And then in terms of the social crime prevention strategy, I will request assistance from the chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Honourable Members. The social crime prevention strategy has long left the Department of Social Development, being the lead department on it. With that strategy document having been approved by all management structures, including the sectoral structures, I'm now talking about the heads of social development, as well as MINMEC, it has already served before the JCPS cluster, it has been endorsed. It has already served before the Social Protection and Community Development cluster has been endorsed. If need be, perhaps the next stage may well be Cabinet, for Cabinet to consider whether, in fact, that strategy would meet the expectations of Cabinet. The document is there, and in fact, it's being implemented as we speak. It's only the necessary endorsements that are still being sorted at various levels. So in a sense, there is no lacuna. The document is there, and the strategies are being implemented. But perhaps, if I may just add, there is a critical question in relation to social crime prevention strategy, whether, in fact, it should exist as a standalone, or, in fact, it should be incorporated in the strategy that the JCPS, especially the kind of security side of JCPS, is responsible for. It is a matter that we are continuing to battle with, but certainly the two, as they currently exist, reinforce each other very well.
No, thank you. I need to indicate that we intended to also come as a cluster. It's a pity that the programs couldn't really match well with
other cluster chairpersons who relate in this. But nonetheless, what we normally do, like we did with governance, we are going to sit down and go through the report that has been presented. And therefore, if there are issues that require a follow-up from our side, we're definitely going to pick them up and identify it yourselves and request that we have a follow-up presentation. We appreciate, the collaborative work that is done. Of course, we wish we have much more time. You know, the way it is not really assisting us very well, but we've got an overall picture, which is quite good for this for now. It can help us to proceed in order to get into all the nitty-gritties. Just to indicate as well that we deal a lot with the anti-corruption strategy from public system administration, and it's quite interesting when we get some other aspects that relate to that, and therefore I'm sure we might sort of pick up some elements that we need to see that collaboration from the side of government when we do that oversight. And therefore, of course, part of why we're engaging in this exercise, the issue of the civil society as well will come critical in terms of our way forward. But we really appreciate the presentation. I just need to indicate, and thank you very much, DJ. I need to indicate then that we'll take the last presentation while they're preparing for tea, because it's still getting ready. And then after this presentation, we can have a bit of a break because we'll have worked well, and then we can proceed with the last presentation. So on the agenda, if I look at it, we were supposed to get a brief from, okay, we had social protection. Okay, it's the social protection and community development cluster now. So we're going to get that brief, social development, from social development, on the social protection and community development. Thank you very much. I don't think most of you would like to leave because you would listen to others, but I you can use a discretion in terms of that. Those who are claimed as a public safety administration, they can't go anywhere. With other clusters, of course, but at the same time, maybe let's see after the break, or would encourage them to remain so that, you know, because it's MDGs and we are all want to have an understanding of what is happening. Can I then request, the next presentation to be put, once it's ready, I will get an indication. Sorry to just put you under tight time, but please indicate to us once you are ready.
Madam Chair, thank you very much, and good morning to you and the honourable members. Madam Chair, perhaps I should say from the outset, my name is Vusi Matonsela, Director General of the Department of Social Development. Of course, I'm here in my capacity as Chair of the Social Protection and Community Development Cluster. I must point out at this stage that having looked at because the one presentation that was made by a cluster before us, that there seems to be not a common approach to how the presentations have been prepared. We understood the invitation to this committee to be one that seeks an account from the cluster departments, on how we have fared in relation to the Millennium Development Goals, based on the report that was presented to the General Assembly of the United Nations, which then would require us to trace the information that is contained in the country report that was presented, demonstrating what the various departments that are part of the Social Protection and Community Development Cluster have been seized with. Areas of progress, where there's lack of progress, and so on. That being the case, Madam Chair, this presentation is rather long. You will appreciate the fact that, in fact, the Social Protection and Community Development Cluster is the lead department on MDGs. In a sense, especially working together with the Human Development Cluster of government.
So in a sense, our report is more comprehensive. I saw that the other Glasgow has looked at convergence between the outcomes approach of government going forward with the MDGs. But our presentation is retrospective. It looks at what we have done up to now. So, but if you will allow me, Madam Chair, I'm just hazarding the fact that the amount of time that may be available would probably not be sufficient. I can tell you I have more than 30 slides, I think. 32 or 31 slides, or so 30 slides in substance. Would that assist you, Madam Chair? I mean, I don't know how much time I've got.
Okay, let's see how we actually proceed.
Sorry, Chairperson.
To know that we have another presentation coming, but I think 31 slides we can manage. You know, you will be able to manage. We will divide the time into. Okay, before I proceed, let me hear Honourable William.
Sorry, Chairperson, the document we've got hasn't got the same front as that slide there. It says multi-party parliamentary women's caucus on the front.
Now, if you page three times, it will get you to that. Three or four times. This is primarily because Statistics South Africa and the Department of Social Development have worked closely together. So the first one is a presentation by SSA to the multi-party committee. This is a cluster report. Unfortunately, we can only use Social Development's corporate image. So I guess I'm abusing the position of chair for that purpose. Would that be okay? Can I proceed then?
Just to get it clear, you are, in terms of the indication of your focus, it will be around the cluster of progress on the report that is submitted. Okay, so can you repeat the reiterate? I think I get you, but I just need all of us to be clear once we move forward.
The
country report, in fact, the Millennium Development Goals, by and large, relate to the work done by two clusters in government at present, social protection and community development, as well as the human development cluster. And those two clusters work closely together. And as part of the delegation I lead today, we have representatives from various departments which cut across those two clusters. I don't know whether they can acknowledge themselves here. The Department of Labor, the Department of Social Development, of course, which Department of Rural Development is part of the cluster
and
as
public
well.
Works.
I don't know who else.
Public Works as well.
Public Works is here.
Here.
Environmental Affairs.
Human Settlement is here.
Human Settlements. So it's quite a sizable number of departments. And most of these departments have a direct contribution to make. So in that sense, in the presentation, we will try and steer clear of mentioning departments specifically, but focus on the goals themselves. I'm afraid, though, that we've taken some license as social development to give more examples purely based on our familiarity with our own work. If we can, am I supposed to? No, it's okay. Let me use this one. Madam Chair, honourable members, I will perhaps to say that the outline of the presentation focuses on the background, the introduction and challenges, the MDG results for the social sector in relation to goals number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. And then thereafter, we'll proceed to conclusion. This gives background to the Millennium Declaration, which was adopted in September 2000, where world leaders converge to adopt it. The Millennium Declaration's main focus is the promotion of human rights, such as the right to education, health, water, security, and shelter. So the compilation of this MDG report is a process that started in 2009, which was led by Statistics South Africa, which is partly why we have the Statistician General being part of the team that is here today. We consulted with both government departments as well as civil society organizations since November 2009 in the compilation of this report. Statistics South Africa created sector working groups, each focusing on one goal or more, depending on the mandate of specific government departments. And the sector working groups met regularly to assess data collected from and submitted by various institutions. But perhaps, Madam Chair, I should skip the background for purposes of time and get as close as possible to where we need to be. But it's important to highlight the fact that the MDGs commence from 1990. And this is a period that will span 25 years, from then to 2015. South Africa's reference is only from 1994, which is 4 years after the MDGs were... I'm looking at your body language. I wasn't too sure whether I'm still on track. Okay. So the characteristics of the MDGs are as follows. They are time-bound goals, they are quantifiable targets, and internationally agreed upon indicators. The goals are, as we know them, goal number one being that of eradicate extreme poverty and hunger, goal number two, achieve universal primary education, number three, promote gender equity and empower women, goal number four, reduce child mortality. Number five, improve maternal health. Number six, combat HIV and AIDS, malaria and other diseases. Goal number seven, ensure environmental sustainability. And number eight, develop a global partnership for development. Although the social sector departments countrywide cover a wide spectrum of issues, some of their work cannot be measured by indicators that are dubbed both domestic or international, developed by and for the MDGs. So this includes critical work done by various departments, including the Department of Social Development, which means that there's a lot of work that government does through various departments, but not all that work is measurable for purposes of the MDGs, because there are indicators that are used to measure whether or not we are achieving these goals. So as such, the report may at times not present a comprehensive coverage of the social sector's contribution for the achievement of the MDGs. Perhaps, Madam Chair, I should also point out that this presentation proceeds from the premise that honourable members have in fact received copies of this report, and that they have read it in order to make it easy for me to walk them through the park through by means of this presentation. So all information submitted to Statistics South Africa for compilation of the report had to be subjected to stringent quality assurance processes, and as a result, some of the information submitted by various sources was not included in the report. As noted in the country report, the lack of data led to non-reporting on 10 MDG indicators, as well as one domesticated indicator. With respect to the country's report, a number of challenges conspired to prevent our country from meeting some of the goals, and these include, amongst others, the high levels of income disparity, structural unemployment, the impact of HIV and AIDS, and the recent global economic crisis. With regard to goal number one. The data at hand indicated that the proportion of people living below the poverty line has declined. Point number two is that the Gini coefficient remains very high, which means that income equality remains very high in the country. Employment to population ratio remained static, that access to free basic services by indigents is on the increase, which means that we're doing well overall on tackling issues relating to the proportion of population living within the poverty line, as well as access to basic services. In this regard, the social assistance program, led by the Department of Social Development, has made a very significant contribution to the attainment of goal number one. Studies on the social assistance program suggest that social grants reinforce developmental impacts within households in terms of nutrition, education, health, vital services, and employment. Absolute poverty, in relation to this, the proportion of people living in absolute poverty as measured by the threshold of $1 to $2.5 a day has declined. South Africa has effectively more than half the population living below the poverty line of $1 a day from 11.3% in 2000 to 5% in 2006. So this suggests that South Africa has met MDG goal number one. Of course, the poverty trap, the poverty gap ratio declined from 3.3 in 2000 to 1.1 in 2006 at the $1 per person per day threshold. Studies carried out by, amongst others, the SA itself, including the presidency's 15-year review, suggests that the social assistance program is the single most important driver of the decline in poverty and has made a significant impact in reducing poverty, redistributing income, and reducing inequality. Which means that if we looked at the South African population as it stands and look at income levels, if you remove social grants, the picture would look very different, radically different. But the social grants are very, very important in dealing with issues of inequality and redistributing income. For an example, from a modest 2005 million recipients of social grants in 1994 to over 14 million in 2010, the rapid expansion of the social assistance program accounts for the growth in expenditure levels of the poor. The most notable expansion has been that of the child support grant, which rose from 34,000 beneficiaries in 1999 to over 10.3 million by March 2011. So recent research suggests that the child support grant contributes to improving the nutrition levels of children between ages 0 and 2. Social grants, along with wages and through employment, contributed to growth in per capita income between 1995 and 2005. So when it comes to income distribution, it says that although levels of inequality remain high in South Africa, social grants have made a significant contribution to reducing the levels of the Gini estimates for the country. On the food poverty line, the percentage of the population living below the food poverty line of 148 rands in 2000 indexed to 209 rands equivalent in 2006 declined from 28.5 to 24.8% respectively. the proportion of males living below the poverty line declined from 26.7% to 22.9%, while the number of females living below the poverty line declined from 30.2% to 26.4% between 2000 and 2006. So similarly, the distribution of food parcels to needy households through the Social Relief of Distress program plays an important role in relieving incidents of poverty. And more recently, the distribution of food through the food banks network throughout the country has added significantly to reducing instances of food insecurity. The Expanded Public Works program has also played a significant role as a short to medium term measure to creating employment, building skills, and eradicating extreme poverty and hunger through the income that people receive while they are on that program. So the social sector made a significant contribution to reaching the EPWP targets of 1 million job opportunities by 2009. So these initiatives are also providing a strong platform for further sustainable long-term solutions to poverty-related issues. When it comes to free basic services for the indigent, what is indicated here is that more poor households are benefiting from the provision of free basic services from municipalities. And according to the 2008 estimates, 8.1 million consumer units were receiving electricity from municipalities and other service providers in South Africa. And 2.8 million, which is estimated at about 34.8%, of these were receiving free basic electricity. So the number of consumer units receiving basic electricity rose by 6% between 2007 and 2008. The total number of consumer units that received free basic water services increased by 16.3% from 9.9 million to 11.5 million during the 2007-2008 financial years. According to the 2008 estimates, 60%, which is 7 million of the 11.5 million households receiving water, that water was received free. So this basically demonstrates, the next slide demonstrates that in relation to the poverty line, looking at the purchasing power parity, which starts from $1 per day, which indexed over time to 1.25, $2 per day to 2.25. On the left-hand side, it indicates, if you look at the percentage below the poverty line, in 2000, we had, in relation, say, to the $1 purchasing parity, we had 11.3%, which dropped. Sorry, I think I'm confusing you there. If we look at the, let's concentrate more on the poverty gap, which is represented by the last two columns, that we see a decline in relation to the $1 from 3.2 to 1.1 from 2000 to 2006. If you look at 1.25, it declines from 5.4 to 2.3. If we look at $2, it declines from 13.0 to 8.1. In relation to the $2.5, it declines from 18.0 to 12.5. This indicates that significant progress has indeed been made in reducing the levels of poverty in the country, which is why we believe we have met the Millennium Development Goal number one. This leads us to the second goal of achieving universal education. Now, I must point out at this stage that this is a goal for which the Human Development Cluster is more directly responsible. But the Human Development Cluster works very closely with the Social Protection and Community Development Cluster. But in this regard, I'm happy to report that the adjusted net enrollment for females has increased from 97% in 2002 to 98.8% in 2009. The functional literacy rates of 15 to 24-year-olds increased from 88% in 2002 to 91% in 2009. The completion rate of primary education by those aged 18 has risen from 89.6% in 2000 to 93.8% in 2009. So it appears that South Africa, our government, through its initiatives of no fee-paying schools, free transport, and feeding schemes in our schools, has benefited the poor immensely. But there are other aspects that are important, although not necessarily measured for purposes of the Millennium Development Goals, but are worth mentioning. For an example, early childhood development. In this regard, all indicators for goal number two do not include children between ages 0 and 4. Yet, ECD is widely believed to provide a firm foundation for lifelong learning, which is a key element of a dynamic, literate, and knowledge-based society. So by March 2011, there were 19,000 registered early childhood development centers that cater for this age cohort. And by the way, this age cohort with early childhood development stands a better chance of succeeding through the education system. So by March 2011, we had registered 19,000 early childhood development centers, with 790,000 children benefiting from the services that are being rendered from there, with an estimated 720,000 of these children directly receiving subsidies from the state. The impact of the child support grant, I think I indicated this, is already well documented, but it indicates here that according to Statistics South Africa's General Household Survey report, of 2003 to 2007, which was released in July 2009, the most notable impact of the expansion of the child support grant is that children benefiting from the grant are likely to go to school. So there is a relationship between access to the child support grant, which is under goal number one, to grant goal number two, in relation to the ability by children to access schooling. So in 2007, the percentage of low-income households which received any kind of grants and were sending their children aged between 5 and 19 years to school increased from 73% in 2003 to 81% in 2007, which is linked to the next goal that we will discuss. So similarly, the attendance ratio for individuals aged between 5 and 19 years is higher in households who receive grants than those that did not receive them. So under the Social Relief of Distress Program, the Department of Social Development from time to time does design special dispensations that allow children from poor families to, in addition to social grants they get, in fact, purchase school uniforms in addition to what some provincial departments make available to children to purchase school uniforms. Other initiatives such as the National School Nutrition Program and the provision of school transport add substance to the realization of children's rights in relation to access to education. This slide indicates the enrollment ratio of children aged between 7 and 13 based on by their sex. The blue block indicates or represents males, and the red one represents females. You will see from 2002, in 2002, females were marginally higher than males by 0.6. And that, in fact, has remained. It indicates here that from 2002 up to 2009, the enrollments of females has, in fact, remained high over that period of time, which is good news for issues of advancement of women. But what it does indicate, as the Statistician General pointed out on one occasion, is that if this trend continues, we may get to a point where more affirmative steps would need to be taken in favor of boy children. Goal number three, promote gender equality and empower women. In this regard, South Africa has made significant progress in meeting the goal of promoting gender equality and will most likely meet all the key targets for this goal by 2015. There are more girls than boys in both secondary and tertiary institutions. Women share and on non-agricultural wage employment remains below half. But the proportion of seats held by women in National Assembly increased from 25% in 1994 to 44% in 2009. The bullets below are just additional information which indicates that women constitute 67% of the recipients of the old age grant as well as the disability grants, the numbers of which come to 2.4 million women. The old age grant also serves as surety with people, which people are able to leverage further financial and social resources. Women as caregivers make up 98% of recipients of the child support grant. Well, the gross enrollment ratios and gender parity index at tertiary level for selected years, that is 1996, 2001, 2003, 2008, the first block on the female gross enrollment ratios indicates that in 1996 we had 0.09 females enrolled, and men were marginally higher at 0.11. In 2001, women became marginally higher than men at 0.11, men at 0.10. And that trend has remained the same. In fact, it has increased more significantly in 2008. 0.13 for women, and men remained at 0.11 in 2008. So the gender parity index is basically as indicated on the last column there. Goal number four, reduce child mortality. Now, this is another goal in which the Human Development Cluster takes a leadership role, but various departments within the Social Protection and Community Development Cluster have a contribution to make. But the report indicates that infant mortality rate remains stable at 53 per 1,000 live births. So 53 deaths per 1,000 live births in 2007. It also indicates that under 5 mortality rate has risen from 59 per 1,000 live births, 59 deaths per 1,000 live births in 1998 to 104 deaths per 1,000 live births in 2007. Where we've done well is where we talk about the proportion of one-year-old children immunized against measles, which has risen from 68.5% in 2001 to 98.3% in 2009. Life expectancy at birth has dropped. This slide talks to under 5 mortality rate in South Africa in 1998 in relation to the Millennium Development Goal, the final target being 2015. While the target is 20 per 1,000 live births, 20 deaths per 1,000 live births, we see that in 1998 we were at 59 deaths, and in 2001 it had increased to 97. In 2007 it had increased to 104. So instead of moving towards 20, we have in fact been moving away from that 20, which means that we have not done well in this particular area. I must say, though, that the Statistician General will be aware of the fact that civil society organizations working in this particular field actually say that South Africa has overestimated the deaths, meaning we have painted a bleak picture. We would rather be accused of that than painting a rosy picture, Statistician General, I'm sure. Goal number 5 of improved maternal mortality. What we see here is that maternal mortality rate is high and continues to increase. The proportion of births attended by skilled health personnel increased from 76.6% in 2001 to 94.3% in 2009. That's a positive. The use of modern contraceptive methods by sexually active women has increased from 61.2% in 1998 to 64% in 2003. That's a positive achievement. The antenatal care coverage has increased from 76.6% in 2001 to above 100% at present. So while the target is 38 maternal deaths per 100,000 live births, in 1998 we were at 150. In 2001 we moved up to 369. In 2007 we increased to 625, which means that we've drifted further and further away. But the information at hand indicates that this trend of child mortality as well as maternal mortality are closely linked to issues relating to HIV and AIDS in that period of time. I thought I should make that point. There's a waste power of attention. Why? So that's part of the answer. Goal number six, combat HIV and AIDS, malaria and other diseases. The report indicates that the spread of HIV prevalence in South Africa has stabilized. There's a marked increase in all provinces from 2005 to 2009 in the proportion of people living with HIV who have access to antiretroviral therapy. In 2006, 17% of men had been tested, and in 2009, the figure had risen to 31.8%. Among women, the figures rose from 38% in 2006 to 71.2% in 2009. So death rates associated with TB have risen from 168 per 100 population to 181 in 2007. Evidence suggests that the spread of HIV prevalence in South Africa may have stabilized and has declined among the 15 to 24-year-old cohorts since 2005. If this trend continues, the target with respect to the reduction of HIV infection in the 15 to 24-year age cohort is likely to be met by 2015. This slide basically captures the information I've just presented. That in 2002, where the HIV prevalence rate was at 9.3%, I'm talking here about the age cohort 15 to 24. 9.3% increased to 10.3% in 2005, but declined to 8.7% in 2008. While there are areas where there are setbacks, we have a mixed bag in that there are areas where there are positive trends developing. Goal number seven of ensuring environmental sustainability, the number of species threatened with extinction has increased from 676 in 1990 to 2,458 in 2010. I suspect the rhino poaching has quite a bit to do with that. Carbon dioxide emissions has increased from 358,930 gigagrams in 1994 to 433,527 gigagrams in 2007. So the proportion of population living in slums has remained static, and this is one area where the Department of Human Settlements will be able to speak to us more in depth. The target for the proportion of population using water from an improved drinking source has in fact been achieved in relation to the Millennium Development Goals. This slide talks to access to services by households. What it does indicate is an upward trend from 2002 to 2009. On average, here it speaks to access to sanitation, living in informal dwellings, solid fuels for cooking, solid fuels for heating. By and large, we see an upward swing in relation to water supply, sanitation, despite some interesting revelations leading to the last elections. people living in informal dwellings. But we see here a downward trend in relation to solid fuels for cooking. Similarly, we see a downward trend for solid fuels for heating. And the connection to the mains electricity has increased. From 2002, you can see an upward trend from 76.8 to 82.6%. Now, there are issues relating to the Millennium Development Reporting, which we thought we should share with the committee, and perhaps in our future interactions, these are some of the things we might need to focus on, which is that the MDG process has highlighted deficiencies in our distributed statistical information. Administrative record systems for producing statistics are still very weak. To illustrate this, the death registration coverage and completeness, those remain quite suspect.
Mm-hmm.
By and large, not necessarily because the system itself is weak, there is a lot of non-reporting even by citizens themselves. And environmental indicators depend on international agencies' data. We are not generating our own data in this regard. The maternal mortality registration systems were plagued by a plethora of competing sources. Sources use competing definitions, producing contradictory estimates, which is why I pointed out earlier on that there are those who believe that we have overestimated the mortality rates in respect of both infants and mothers. The net enrollment ratio and the gross enrollment ratio, in this regard, the EMIS data still has to still has quality concerns. The age-specific population estimates are still called into question. Still assign blame where the numerator and denominator come from different sources. And these are things I'm sure the statistician in general will be able to speak to more intelligently. But we must understand that the MDGs and their reports are not based on what we think or how we feel we are doing. They must be backed by statistical information. the report of 2010, nonetheless, affords South Africa with an opportunity to institutionalize the MDG reporting as part of the country's national statistics system. And it places the MDGs firmly on the country's developmental agenda. There's this adage that goes, what gets measured gets done, which means that if these things that we're talking about in relation to the Millennium Development Goals and these interactions we're having continue, a lot of work in relation to the MDGs will get done. But we must insist that it must get done right. But there are questions with regard to what we are measuring. Are we measuring what matters? And I'm sure the committee will ask itself the question, is all that we are presenting here what matters in relation to the MDGs? Many things are not being done. That's the question we have to ask. Since the report is data intensive, and uses the process to strengthen the information systems that underpin the statistical information. We believe this can be done by institutionalizing the National Coordinating Committee and the sector working groups that are coordinated by Statistics South Africa, working closely with ourselves. What is required? We believe what is required is commitment to measuring and reporting on MDGs, commitment to build the requisite information infrastructure that allows for reporting on MDGs, building sufficient critical mass to achieve the objectives of the Millennium Declaration. Slide number 31, Madam Chair, speaks to things that are required. I don't suppose it's necessary for me to go through them line by line, but then that concludes our presentation, Madam Chair. Thank you.
DG, I must just say, so we've just starting to respond to presentation, that this was an assignment well done. You know, because it actually provided specific issues that you're looking for in terms of the output, in terms of what is it that has happened. Yes, of course, I know in members' minds there are a number of things that you're starting to argue and debate, in particular the issue of poverty eradication, and I'm sure members have gone through that. We're just talking about it, you know, the progress that you see on the MDG and the reality that is currently taking place, including the, you know, shedding out of jobs, et cetera, et cetera. Perhaps those are the issues. It provides proper engagement once it's like that. And therefore, we really appreciate the public citizen administration would actually agree with us. It took us two presentations together, I think. You know, the first presentation just fell, I don't know, really. But the next presentation, that's when we realize that, oh, definitely now, you know, this is the proper kind of a feedback we want from government. And, you know, the only difference is that they're on their own, unlike yourself, that you brought other people from it. So that we feel it's at last that thing, which is quite good. But nonetheless, I think we'll continue to improve in terms of reporting. We appreciate that. But at this point in time, can I allow the members to engage with the report? And thank you very much for the report.
Okay.
Honorable Williams, Honorable Dreyer, Honorable Van Skalkwyk, Honorable Maluleke, you'll go in that order, and then Honorable Suk. Start, Honorable Williams.
Thank you, Chairperson. The DG did report on the problems with the information. And I just want to know, when do they envisage, or do we envisage, that we'll get uniform data? Because some of the reporting happened between 2000 and 2006, and other data was 2002 to 2009. So I'd just like to know, when will we ever get a clear picture that we can look at everything in the same timeline? On goal number 6, slide 26, the drop in from 2005 to 2008, I'd like to know if that is a result of people actually dying, and what has been done to ensure that new infections are reduced. Goal 7, slide 28, what is the main reason for the increase from 2002 to 2009 in people living in informal dwellings? And just one observation I have, on goal number 3, to promote gender equality and empower women, if you look around this room, most of the department representatives are men. In fact, most of the people in this room are men. So, government, we need to step up to the plate with this. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Williams. Honorable Dreyer.
Madam Chair, yes, it's a very comprehensive presentation. There is a lot of information. I don't really have a question. Yeah, it is a question. It's a comment and then a question flowing from that. I just picked out one trend, and that's the one that I find most distressing of all. There's a lot of good trends where we see improvement, and that's great. But the one we have to focus on the downward slides, because that's where we have to focus, and there's something wrong. We find that child mortality is up significantly so. Roughly, it's about 1 in every 10 children that will die before the age of 5. That's horrific. We also find that life expectancy for women particularly is down. Women now is expected to not get older than 55. That's very distressing too. Now, the Director General said that that could be ascribed to the impact of AIDS, which is now starting to slow down. But there's a third one that I'm not sure that you can ascribe that to AIDS, and that is the maternal deaths are also seriously on the increase, and it's now 625 out of 100,000 women that will die in during childbirth, while the target, the international target, is 58. A target of 38, we're standing at 625. That's very distressing. How do you explain that? Because we need to find what are the reasons, even if it's not the correct figure, because you pointed there may be, you know, the statistics might not 100% correct, but there's a very clear trend, and that's very distressing, and we need to address that.
Thanks, Honorable Dreyer. Honorable Van Stoutbeek.
Thank you, Chair. Just a very short question, sir. I regard the child support grant as very important. It's essential, especially I'm from the rural areas there. Now, is there a manner in which you can ascertain whether the grants are really used to support children? Maybe it's a dumb question, but still.
Thanks, Honourable Fonskamp. Honourable Maluleke.
Thank you, Chair. On page 15, last paragraph, Chair, they talked about the transport for learners. If we look at it on the report, it's good, but if you can measure it outside, because sometimes the transport will vanish in the middle of the year. So I don't know if we can say we have progress or what. That is the challenge that I've seen. And also on the issue of the ECDs, Chair, we should upload the cluster because it's not only children who benefited, also women, because they have been capacitated on being teachers in reality on the issue of ECDs. And also I'm happy because rural areas are part of that. They have also benefited on the issue of ECDs. Women are working now in the ECDs. And then on the issue of, I only see that they only write the proportional seat has been, they only write there has been increasing the National Assembly. I don't know what about the legislatures. They only measure the National Assembly. And then we also applaud the ANC because it's the one who carried the mandate of people outside to bring women in the National Assembly. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honourable Maluleke. Honourable Suka.
Thank you, Chairperson. I must also applaud this report, very comprehensive. Maybe on a lighter note, surely also provinces will have to play their part in looking into the gender equality. You see, like the Western Cape, you remember, there was a whole lot of law about that. And you can see that women or girls are more than boys. I want also to say that's true. You can also measure that in churches. You find more women than men. But
which one?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Chairperson,
Suka.
You see, on a serious note, the issue of eradicate extreme poverty, goal number one, to me, is a very serious fundamental challenge, given the fact that I'm not sure, maybe the minister, deputy minister, will have to allude to this one, because surely it speaks directly to him also in terms of the land question, so that you translate that so people become more productive on the land. but if you don't have the land to work on so that you avoid some of the issues that have been raised here, it's a fundamental question for me. Chairperson, on a serious note, because you will never, otherwise, yes, I'm excited by the social development by giving out those grants, but surely we don't want to go that route. It might not be very sustainable in the long term, giving grants to people who are supposed to be working, and they must work on the land. So this issue of the land is a very fundamental issue for me, that we need to deal with it head on. Otherwise, we'll massage the status quo without going into details and turning the tide around that one. The second issue, Chairperson, on the issue of the statistics that were given, we've got census on the one hand, and of which I would have loved to hear the statistician to allude to what, to augment to what has been raised, in as far as the stats are concerned, to qualify our your presentation, because sometimes it is said these the statistics in terms of the census are not very reliable. Despite that, because of our geographic setup, you know, where the inaccessibility of our foot soldiers to collect those statistics so that they inform government when it comes to the budget for the country. So I'm saying more work needs to be done. There's a much improvement, but surely this issue of the census that must speak to what we are doing must come very clear and very succinctly so. You see, also, I think the report much that is also good, I think in brackets, where we talk of the dollar per day, just put in brackets the rent, so that you must domesticate this report to ordinary citizens of this country, so that everyone can read and understand, because you are referring to a dollar per day that was about 3-4 years ago, and it, of which it was a 10 rand, equal to 10 rand per day. Today, the dollar is around 6 rand. Now, why are you not putting that into practice so that we understand? Because we are a developing country, yes, and yet you measure us with the developed countries because you are talking of international trends. What about the African trends? Where do we stand as a country? So I'm saying you need to demonstrate or fine-tune your report so that it speaks to our own language, to be understood by the ordinary people, because this is a public document that would want to be read by our people, not unless otherwise. Chairperson, on page 9, I'm not sure whether it's page 9, I was trying to follow the report attentively. You see, if you take, go back again on that bullet that's looking down, the employment to population ratio remained static. You know, it's a huge challenge, and I think the unions only yesterday were also debating about this matter. And yet there's a clarion call by the president on this issue, the job creation. Maybe the new growth path will assist, will respond to this one. But I'm saying, Chairperson, much that this report brings out what is the status quo in the country, but surely what is not saying in certain areas is the turnaround. How do we respond? Because much that you are pointing out to those challenges throughout, but we are not saying clearly how do we respond as a country to those matters that you have picked up as challenges or shortcomings that needs to be improved here and there. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Honorable Suka. Honorable Nwaisi, who's also a Deputy Minister in Implementing Programs.
That's disempowering. Whilst I'll try to defend the report, but I'll also use my cap as an MP. Maybe to add on the issue raised by, was it Honorable Dreyer, to say, how do you explain the high mortality? The high mortality rate being a medium income country. I want to add that, being a medium income country. not a low income country. South Africa is a medium term, income country. Maybe it might be interesting, statistician general, to understand as to how do we compare to other medium income, income countries. It might be very interesting. Because you might think that South Africa has a lot of resources compared to other poor countries. But even in those standards, we tend to not to be doing well. That's the first issue which I thought I Honorable Williams was talking about the statistical information. Without sounding pessimistic or alarmist, we're dealing with the cold facts here. Looking at this data, it seems as if it goes up to 2009, am I right? It goes up to 2009, which then suggests that when we are talking about, for instance, slide 10 on poverty and hunger, we might be sitting with a worse situation today, because poverty and hunger are linked to unemployment, and we've taken a beating in the last 2 years because of the global financial crisis. Lots of people lost jobs and so on, which therefore suggests that the situation might be worse than, because I think almost everybody has said we've lost more than 500,000 jobs. And that is not factored. It might appear later on in the other figures. So what I'm trying to say is that, are we thinking about factoring that, the issue of the serious losses, serious retrenchments, and so on? The last point which I thought I also wanted to make is that, on slide 15, quantitatively, we might be doing well in terms of pushing our children into schools, but the question everybody is starting to ask is, qualitatively, our education remains in a very serious challenge. You look at the figures released yesterday about literacy and so on. To even boast and to commend Western Cape at 40-something percent, the best province is at 40-something percent, what does it say? So I think the challenge would be, as much as quantitative we're doing well, we must also look at qualitatively, how are we doing as a country on some of these indicators. But I know that the DG as a lawyer will say, no, we're answering the question given to us, to say where are we. But I think it's going to be very important that we also understand that the Millennium Development Goals were set as minimums. We can't relax at that particular level of the minimum. We are supposed to be performing higher than that. I thought that I need to make that point. And also given the level of our own development as a country. But I think there's that question which Honorable Suga is raising, of the rural-urban inequalities, which is a very, very serious problem. At some stage, we might need to interrogate that, not just to sit on the averages and so on, to interrogate that, because when you talk about extreme poverty, you're talking about the rural areas. When you're talking about massive unemployment in the young people, you're talking women in the rural areas, not just women. So that's going to be very important later on as we deal with these issues. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Nancy. I'm going to request Honorable Matlakane to really join other members of Parliament, because he's behind the camera and it's difficult for me to see him. You can stop this.
But okay, you can make your start with your question or comment.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. Just on page 19, I just wanted to understand the issue about women and wages. That slide that talks about non-agricultural wage that remain half. What's a contributing factor? You didn't quite speak to that. And slide 21, you speak about the life expectancy level dropped. Do you have figures? Do you have stats that shows that, or just simply a quick statement? The last question: should between this report and the what one refers to this the African peer review mechanism, is there one complementing the other? Because if I look at, I read this report and the presentation, it's fairly good work that has been done in terms of what we have done as a country in terms of the MBG. But I'm asking the reverse questions. Shouldn't this question also, the report, the MBG, in terms of our report, somehow complement in terms of the African mechanism peer review? Because I think that when you read and we hear the report coming, it's fairly negative compared to what you read here, what you get here as a presentation. Now, is the integration, is there one that feeds or complementary to the other? I'm asking a question that you did not present. Maybe it would be useful maybe at some stage to have some interaction between the two reports, because in my understanding, one should be able to complement the other moving forward, because the issues that we're dealing with, there seems to be, there's some issues are more or less the same around these issues that confront the country. Thanks.
Yeah, just to indicate to Honorable Ramatlakane that before you arrived, that matter did come of the African peer review together with MDGs. And also there was an indication of the minister having to present on the African peer review, but there was a question directly related to that in the earlier presentation. But nonetheless, I think if you need to just briefly respond to it, that will be great, taking on board also the question I raised earlier. Honorable Mohali, lastly.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question will be around infant mortality. To say, I come from the rural areas, staying next to the farms. I know that most of the people who are working at the farms are foreigners, some of them who do not even have proper papers. And they'll go to the hospital. Maybe they didn't attend prenatal classes and so on. It will be late. They go to the hospital. They are attended at the hospital. And when you do your statistics, do you take that into consideration that some of these people are here for economic reasons and some are not even legal? But when you do the statistics, how do you do that? And my second question would be on the, yes, I do, women's share on non-agricultural wage employment remains below. Moving from that sentence, I would say, are you saying to us, because most of the women are working in agricultural development and so on, are they earning the wage that they're supposed to earn, are not earning below the poverty line and so on, are they earning the right wage in agricultural whatever? That would be my question, and thank you.
Hey, I know there's quite a lot, but I know you'll also have a way of bringing it together. But just to emphasize that, of course, you know, members have captured very critical issues that we really have to engage thoroughly, and I appreciate that. I would also echo that once we're talking about doing well on the poverty eradication, and as in the same report, we've got the Gini coefficients, talking of stagnation in terms of employment, that in terms of employment rate, that poses another kind of a challenge that we definitely have to critically look into and sort of come up with an impact which is reasonable as well. But
safe to say I'm leaving it to yourself to sort of do a response that will cover all without being extremely long.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Honourable Members, for your questions and comments. I was hoping, Madam Chair, and I realize I might not succeed, that there are very senior people in government who have come all the way from Pretoria joining me, and I'm sure they would hate to go back without having opened their mouths at this meeting. So, in fact, I would like to start with the Statistician General, with a number of questions here that relate to statistics, statistical data and the like. And then I'll encourage colleagues from various departments here to field questions relating to their areas of work.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Now I understand why I got a late call yesterday to come to Cape Town. From that day, Madam Chair. Let's deal with the matters statistics first and get them out of the way, because I think we have to concern ourselves with policy options rather than cause the statistics to be the matter of debate. Let me start by saying not all things that are important can be measured. Neither can all things that we measure are important. So statistics constitutes a slightly minor component of the things that we are trying to deal with. But in the statistics, we shed light on the things that require policy attention. So let me preamble this in that way. There are very specific questions around the data, which I think I'll try and deal with, and probably also indicate that our trade and art is such that when we are uncertain, we can quantify the degree of uncertainty and be categorical about it and say 95% certain that this is where we are, but there is a 5% margin of uncertainty, and that part, in that margin might be where the answer is. So there are all these things around statistics, and of course there are laws of large numbers that if you get this 95%, then the laws of large numbers tell you largely the real story. Now, coming to the question of the MDGs, Goal 4, 5, and 6. Goal 4, 5, and 6 are correlated. They are correlates. I mean, if you look at Goal 4, reduce child mortality, improve maternal mortality, combat HIV, AIDS, and they are not only correlated, but they are causal. There's a lot of causal relationship there. And when you look at the numbers, you can see that they are moving in the same direction. So if the question is about whether the figures are right or not, probably the question should be, why are they moving in the same direction when you are measuring independent individual events? So there is truth in the number. The second thing is that in the overall number of deaths in South Africa, the numbers of deaths are increasing. The question then should be, if the numbers are increasing, and we agree that they are increasing and that's the ladder, why then question the distribution? Because we are waiting with the same number. Either you have to shift that number of deaths to somebody else, because the quantum is the same and it's increasing. So there are certain things in the law of large numbers and in the law of counting that you can't shift. You may not like what you see, but indeed the quantum is known. These are records of people who have died in South Africa from the sources of information. Their pattern of death happened to be one that looks unfamiliar. That is, there are more women who die in a particular age group in that number. If that number is too high, then we should reduce the total number, which is 11. So I am trying to clarify us on the question of pattern, level, and trend. So once we have agreed on the quantum, then the part in is neither here nor there. Now, coming to the question of a maternal mortality rate, when you disaggregate these numbers by province, you find that there are provinces that are very low on this, and there are those that are very high. So if you question the aggregate, then you are really in a conundrum. For instance, in the Western Cape, maternal mortality ratio, when you looked at this, it's about 70, or even lower. KwaZulu-Natal, 700 and something. So these are numbers, so I'm saying yes, let's question them, but let's question them much more carefully, because when we go into disaggregation, we start realizing that this reality might be the reality that is facing us stuck in the face. So I would argue that maternal mortality ratio, it may not be an issue of, if I were to delve into policy, because I don't have take back for this number. I only have take back for method, not for policy, because if I take back for policy and I also measure, then I am playing referee and player at the same time. I have only take back for method, and the method generates these numbers. If you look at, I confuse myself now, but I was saying that the issue of maternal mortality ratio is not the question of, it may not be the question of health services, because most of the children in South Africa are born in hospital. 95% of the deaths occur under care. So the system should have collapsed to a level where things are not working for that kind of maternal mortality ratio to be occurring. So it is not a question of a maternal, because maternal mortality ratio has to do with care at giving birth. It is not about care at giving birth. It is about something else that then complicates the occurrence of birth, and not care at giving birth. So it's not more money for health services. It might be more money for women's own health at the time when they give birth. So that's the kind of thing. The health status at the time when they try to give birth. And I thought that the whole thing of antenatal care, prenatal and so on, if people don't attend that well, or at least they are also probably not well because of other diseases such as being infected with HIV, it might be the burden of that actually impacting on them rather than care at the service. It's not a service level issue. It is about the health of the individual. And when you look at children, you see similar patterns of death. So I think that dispenses with the three indicators, that is maternal mortality, maternal mortality, and HIV and AIDS. Those three are correlated, and they have a causal link. And when you see an increase in the other, you should see an increase. If you see increase in the one, you must see increase in the other. Now, and then the next issue is, of course, of life expectancy. Yes, it is declining largely amongst women because of they are bearing the brunt of. You can see even in the age group 20 to 34, it's been peaking like that. It has started to flatten, and I think going forward you will see that that peakedness at the age of 30 to 34 will start, or 25 to 34 will start, has started to flatten, and we will see a reduction in the number of in the mortality rate, as well as an increase as a consequence in life expectancy going forward, if the current trends persist. The second question is about, that is a statistics issue, why a dollar? For the same reasons, Honorable Member, I hope we have something called Africa, which would be an equivalent of a dollar. You don't have it. I don't know what you could call it, anything you could call it. The problem is that the dollar is the dominant currency. And because we have to compare at purchasing power parity, which is basically, we have to say if this bottle of water in Nigeria costs you 9 naira and in South Africa it costs you X, let us look at the real cost of this bottle as an exchange of goods without using money as a currency. So the standard that we use then is the dollar at the basis of purchasing power parity, as though we are bartering these goods. If we were to go to the rand, then we'd be affected by the same reason that we're saying. In 2001, we are going to 13 rand. Now, the purchasing power parity removes the problems associated with exchange rates, because those go up and down. Yet, this bottle of water remains the same bottle of water with the quantity. So we almost talk at the level of butter economy. So that's why it's dealt with in that way. Why are women not getting as much money as men when they do the same work? In fact, when it is showing that the gender parity index, it's favoring them in progressing through university. Okay. The discrimination is not something that you can remove by law. There's practice. And that practice is so entrenched. If you look at this registration of death, women don't get the same extent of registration at death as men. So it is underreported because there is nothing you can get out of that. There is no inheritance. So the deaths don't get registered. That's part of the discriminatory practices that are traditional entrenched.
And the other one is
so in a way, this thing produces and reproduce themselves, even at workplace. The possibility of a woman getting to that level, at the same level as a man, she has to work twice as hard as a man. She has to be qualified three times more than a man to get to that same level. These things produce and reproduce. And that's why you see the figures being what they are. Despite the fact that in terms of gender parity index at education level, they are showing much more progress. So there are those practices. They even get discriminated at toilets. I used to see the statistics and I thought that women like to travel. And you see these things at the petrol stations, and you see a long queue of women there. So they like to travel. Surely, yes. Why should they have this long queue? And you go in there, you find that there's only one thing that they sit on, and the command is the urinary, and that thing that they sit on. So they cannot be the queue for men, even if men are more than women in traveling, because they have twice the number of facilities that women have in toilets. So these things are entrenched discriminatory practices. So there are cultural practices that are very difficult. There was a question around the question of education. It's a very difficult one. I mean, South Africa has math literacy. A very difficult thing. We've been running something that we thought we are running for the census, to popularize the census, and then we had something censored at schools and asked children, what subjects do you like, what do you do now? Suddenly, since there's been introduction of math literacy, fewer children proportionately do math, even those who could do math. Because there's this thing that is easier, called math literacy. And it's very bad on the children. And because the children have to pass and the schools have to show better marks, the teacher says, you know, this mathematics, my son or daughter, it's difficult, you have to pass, you know. My school has to perform better. And the parents and teachers collude and agree on this, and that I'm paying school fees and saying my son and my daughter must pass. Whatever he passes, it doesn't matter, they must pass. So they will not do mathematics because there are no teachers who teach mathematics anyway. So the contradictions in our society are so deep that we are producing and reproducing very, very difficult situations. And unless we crack these things at our level of understanding, both at the level of theory, practice, and everything, and the data, this thing becomes very difficult. So when I saw this in the data, I said, oh, what is this math literacy? But there's also something good about math literacy, in that it tells you about application. Probably you don't need to throw math literacy out, but you have to combine this as an introductory course for everybody, and if everybody should do mathematics, of course, there must be teachers who must teach the mathematics. But trying to have two streams kills the pool of people that can actually do mathematics, and hence advancing South Africa into being part of the century. I thought that the question of differing points in time, yes, I mean the statistics system is just too distorted, and the models that I think has done justice in terms of saying we really have to move in a statistics system that is enjoined, because we have dates that are quite different. The predictability of when this data is collected is not very clear. Administrative records are not well kept, and line functions that don't keep the statistics, they probably see this just as paperwork, and they don't see that the essence of that paperwork and those records can be transformed into statistical data, and then they can generate a time series, which is very useful. So that needs proper, very, very good attention, and I think Messingani, as you are narrating and saying, how do you define this particular crime? In the way she was going through these things, when she has defined all that, then as a statistician I have to come and count the instances of that complex process and try and quantify it in numbers and generate a time series. So trying to measure social phenomena and quantify it and then create a time series, it's quite a complex thing, but it requires that kind of engagement at that item level, at that unit of measurement level, and all those. I've tried to cover some of the questions that I would cover, but I think this has been a very useful engagement. Madam Donzela, thank you for inviting me. I've earned my lunch.
Okay, let's find out if there are others who would like to contribute quite quickly.
Okay, thanks, Madam Chair, Honorable. I just thought that maybe it's crucial for me to input on the issue that the DG raised in relation to the environmental indicators depending on international agency data. I think that's very true. And as the Department of Environmental Affairs, what we're trying to do in addressing that is we're working very closely with the Statistician General. We're trying to identify all the environmental data sets within the country and take them through the SASQAF accreditation process, and in that manner that will be able to address the issue that we don't have that environmental data as in readily available. But one must also emphasize the fact that it's going to be a very long process because we're still at the point where we identifying the data and then taking it through the whole process with the Statistician General. It's a bit laborious. So, but that's what we are doing in addressing the issue that was raised. Thanks.
Oh, thanks. We'll be probing. We would like to hear more about accreditation, but let's leave it to another time. But thanks for raising that. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. There's two points that I actually wanted to respond to. The issue really was that
I think the point raised that you introduced yourself is starting up by just telling
The name is Wiseman Makasela from the National Department of Social Development. I'm a Deputy Director General responsible for social policy.
Okay, and she was from Environmental Affairs, but the name?
Anamanti from Department of Environmental Affairs. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Proceed. Thank you.
Fine, Chair. The issue was raised that why such a high mortality rate in a middle-income country? And there is something that's quite important that needs to be mentioned there. And that thing really is that the World Bank categorizes countries into low-income, middle-income, and high-income countries. But that kind of status, it is an average. In other words, it's a combination of all incomes in a country that is then divided by the number of people in that country. Now, when you look at South Africa's economic indicators, yes, indeed, South Africa is a middle-income country. But when you look at social indicators, South Africa is not a middle-income country. There is no correlation between the two. Now, that has to do with quite a number of things. Not long ago, when we referred to South Africa, we would talk about a country that is typically where you find islands of wealth in a sea of poverty. That's how we used to describe the country. So we're really taking an average of that. Therefore, if we were to disaggregate our data or income by race, you will appreciate the fact that you will then have different countries. In other words, South Africa, if you were to take one race and compare it to, say, other income averages in a country, it will place South Africa in a different category. So we have a case where primarily incomes that are earned by the white population in South Africa are pulled down and drastically so by the kind of income that is earned generally by your black population. But then, unfortunately, you end up with an average. So there is really that a very clear fact that we really need to appreciate. And also, it calls on us to have an appreciation of the nature, of the depth, of the location, and also the issue of numbers about poverty in South Africa, which is also quite very, very important. In South Africa before, rural areas, there will be remittances that went to rural areas. Young men mostly and fathers will be working in the urban areas and they'll be sending money home. That has disappeared. It is now social grants. And the reason that has disappeared really has to do with the issue of very, very extremely high unemployment. Yesterday when I alighted from the flight, I was with the Statistician General, whom I know pretty well, really, you know. And I was saying, why is it that in South Africa we use the official definition of unemployment, which excludes discouraged work seekers? So it is a false picture when we say only 23% of South Africans are unemployed, when in actual fact we've excluded those that discourage work seekers, which are anything which are at about 15%. So those are the sorts of things really that would explain, you know. Mortality also has to do with the nutritional status of the mother. So the period leading up to the birth is important in terms of the health and nutritional status, what's the name of the mother. So I just thought that I could allude to that one. The other point, rather quite quickly, is the child support grant really used to support children? Now, as a department and as a sector, we are highly, highly confident of the impact of not just the child support grant, but of our social assistance program. And the reason for that has to do with the fact that 98% of our grants are paid to women. Now, if you look at international comparison, when the resources to families are given through the mother or the woman in the family, there's always positive outcomes for the family. Research, whether you're looking at microcredit systems in the world, whether you're looking at small-scale agriculture that's been promoted in different parts of the world, if the woman is at the center of the receipt and is the channel of the receipt of those resources, there will always be positive outcomes for the entire family. Now, in South Africa in particular, there are important things to be mentioned, and those things are the state old age pension, as you are aware, has been paid in South Africa for a very long time. if the state old pension is paid to the grandmother, the positive outcomes for the entire family are guaranteed. Analyses of children's nutritional status, children's educational status like school attendance, the provision of clothing, etc. The pension, when paid to the grandmother, not to the grandfather, the outcomes were positive. Again, contributing to the worldwide phenomenon that when resources are paid to women, there are always positive outcomes for the entire family. Last point, Chair, on that very same issue really has to do with the following. The child support grant is not a magic bullet, and we've never assumed that it is. There is absolutely no way in which you could walk into a family, into a household, and magically remove the child only out of poverty. So, in essence, while the child is the target of the child support grant, in effect, the child support grant operates in reality more as a family support grant without excluding the child. We need to be aware here, and I'm alluding exactly to the same numbers of unemployed people. When the family receives two child support grants or one child support grant, that money will be pooled with other income from other sources for the benefit of the entire family. But however, most encouraging is that all analysis that we've done through research demonstrate a correlation between receipt of a child support grant and positive outcomes for children, particularly nutrition and education. So in a nutshell, Honorable Member, the child support grant is, by all measures and by all standards, being used for the benefit of children in South Africa. Thank you, Chair.
Needs to speak on this matter, we can proceed.
From Aldwin. Chair, it's just, my name is Sipho Senabe. I am a Chief Director at the Department of Public Service and Administration. It's just really the linkage. I think there has been very clear linkages between maternal death and the nutritional status, but there was one specific issue on the contraceptive rate prevalence, which is 64% for South Africa. And the ideal should be ideally 80% for any country. So one way of really, you know, avoiding maternal death is to prevent the pregnancy in the first place. And of course ensure that there is nutrition, education, and other social services that the mother can have. The link between maternal deaths and child mortality is that if a child who is under the age of 5 does not have a mother, that child's chances of surviving beyond 6 years is drastically reduced. So like the Statistician General was saying, there is a link between maternal death and child mortality. So it is important that we've been at a policy level when we then come with the policy options, they are that integrated. Those are the two things that I just wanted to raise. Thank you.
That's another kind of engagement that is required in that area. I'm not very sure whether I captured it. It also relates to contraception, which is another huge debate. Okay, let's pack the matter. You are making a contribution in that, but well, maybe we'll look at it in details and therefore don't open up a can of worms where, yeah, those who are arguing on contraception, activists on women's rights and so on might delve into another matter, but we understand which route we're actually sort of alerting us to. But let's leave those that are still areas of debate and focus on the outcome. Thank you. Any other matter on this important discussion? Mr. Govender?
Ma'am, just a very, very quick input. There was a question about the relationship between the APRM report and the MDG report. I just want to indicate there is a chapter in the implementation report that was submitted in January of 2011. It has a chapter that captures the MDG reports and all of these things. So So the input by DG Madonsela is captured in that report as well.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I saw that there was someone from Human Settlements.
Okay, there's a hand at the back. Let me recognize that hand. You introduce yourself again.
Yeah, I'm Mr. Mkonto from the Department of Labor. I think I'll tackle on the issue of wage disparities. But despite the fact that there is law and sectoral determinations that guarantees equal wage for equal work, in the rural areas, the big challenge we face is that most employers are farmers in the agricultural sector. And our challenge there has been the enforcement of legislation, because farms are private properties. You can't just walk in to determine whether wages are equal, conditions of employment are equal. You have to work closely with the police and other sector departments to access farms to ensure that we can determine whether there's inequality there so we can enforce it. I think our challenge is the enforcement part of our legislation due to the fact that farms are private properties, like domestic houses are private properties. You can't just walk like in the wet place.
Were you suggesting something, DG? Yeah, we've actually captured what you have also raised. Is there another hand? Because I really need to do a comment. Maybe I'll come back to members, but let me indicate that I think we gather a sense of deep issues that we really need to engage in as much as we're in engaging this presentation and the discussion and the responses. I think it's a good discussion, you know, but that's exactly what you really need to oversee and delve more on issues. And therefore, I want to believe that it provides an opportunity as the committee to go back based on the information we had, sit and blend, you know, because we definitely need a thorough engagement on this matter. I must indicate I'm allowing input despite the fact of time, because we had already made an agreement while there was a presentation with the rural development that we would defer the presentation to another time. Yes, some of the issues have been captured within this presentation, but there will be matters that can be raised, and therefore we are not going to have the rural development. Everyone understands it was too engaging, too involving. We therefore don't want a 5 minute presentation that is meaningless. And therefore, in our discussion, we've already agreed that it will be deferred to another time. That is why then I was really taking discussions, but safe to say what comes up, those are the issues we really want to engage with quite seriously and thoroughly. We have identified key issues, you know, but let's delve into those matters. Those are the issues when we say we're doing oversight. We really want to find those signals so that we sort of delve deeply into them. The issues that affect the communities out there, the issues that affect the society, they're the issues that affect transformation of South Africa, and therefore they're very critical. You know, this is part of an overarching oversight we talk about the Parliament intends to do, and therefore we are going to work with government in this approach, in this manner. That is why then we indicated our working together with the Auditor General, with the Public Service Commission, provides a tool that shows us that you know, we can really do better once we focus on key issues. And of course, we do pass the budget. We know that the strategic plan, they are aligned to particular goals, and now goals are also aligned to MDGs. That's great. So now we're going to delve into the work of seeing whether it's fair for money out there. We appreciate some of the good things that came our way. It's the lot that the country has to do. I think we are really, we are busy also, but to just evaluate efficiency in terms of the work that we're doing, we definitely will engage to do that. And I must say, Honourable Members, I'm not sure if you want to raise other matters. You know, I will allow Honourable Williams, Honourable Mahali, and yes, Honourable Nwesi next to me here, starting with Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just I asked you questions that weren't answered. It was on slide 26 on the prevalence of HIV or of AIDS, and I was asking whether the drop from 2005 to 2008 was a result of people dying. And then the other question that I did ask that also wasn't answered was on slide 28. For the, I'd like to know what are the main reasons for the increase from 2002 to 2009 in people living in informal dwellings. Thank you.
Who was the next? Honorable Mohalene. Did you raise your hand, Honorable Suka? Okay.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I had asked a question to the Justice Cluster to say with maintenance, because we really want to go back to the community with the correct answer. Do we have a cut-off age where we'll say this person is no longer going to pay for the maintenance? That question was not answered. And then to social development, it's good. In Limpopo, we are having social workers, not at every clinic, but most of the clinics do have social workers. But are our people accessing the services of the social workers? Because you'll find that, yes, there's a social worker, but the social worker is never there at the station. There's a social worker assigned to a certain clinic, and the social worker is not there. And it's a working distance, it's good, but are our people there now? And then to labor, this thing of farm workers. The problem is I see this, I stay next to farms. I see these people who are working from Monday to Sunday. And it's not even overtime. They'll be just told to say, tomorrow, on a Friday in the afternoon, tomorrow you are working on a Saturday. And then on Saturday you'll be told, on Sunday you are working. No payment, no hours given, nothing. But it seems they don't see any improvement. Yes, these people are supposed to pay this much. They are not paid that much, and the conditions that they live under at the farms. No, there's no improvement, and those people are working so hard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Another one.
No, sometimes you have to be biased. When you deal with the issues, talking from the known to the unknown. You see, the Statistics General says the stats is just giving us pointers and as a way of saying there are certain areas you need to focus on in terms of your policy choices or key policy areas of focus. When you listen to the gentleman, I don't know from which department, was it social development, passionately talking about poverty and all those issues, talking about desegregating that in terms of race. And when you listen to Department of Labor, talking about what is going on in farms, I think is starting to say, I mean, when you're talking about issues of housing, the housing crisis and the informal settlements which you are sitting with in Kokunesizo, it's people coming from the rural areas. It's starting to say this issue of rural development, that's why I was saying I'm not biased, it's so central in South Africa's development that it cannot just be an issue of the department, one department. It's supposed to be an issue of all the departments. Because even how you deliver that, it's not just going to be one department. So that input which we have not been able to get today, it must be an interest of everybody. I mean, if you're talking about the farms, the people who have never tasted political freedom in South Africa are the farm workers and the farm dwellers. And I'm not sure this thing that we have law which is doing this and that, I don't think we've started implementing this issue of the basic human rights for the people, for some of the people in the farms and so on. And you're talking about, you know, some of the information is going to be shocking to the people. Close to 1 million people have been evicted since 1994, up to date, from the farms. So the issue of rural development might need this special focus. And I'm happy, Chairperson, that you say we're going to have a special session. Even your development model in South Africa, we'll have to talk to more to the rural areas. Because we are saying, you're talking about women, 50% of your wards, I mean more than 50% of your wards are rural wards. More than 50%. And when you talk about the worst unemployment which affects women, you're talking about the rural areas. So this issue is a very, very crucial issue. But I'm very happy with that intervention, that these statistics, it's just giving pointers. There are certain policy issues which we'll have to focus on. Thanks.
Well, we really... Oh, okay. Sorry to be biased. Is there any...
On the internet.
Okay, you know, is that hand from members? Because we're embarking on responses now. Okay. Understand, you're also responding to this.
Chairperson, thank you very much.
Okay, let's take
My name is Fulani Matlatsi from Department of Human Settlements. I'm a chief director there. In finance, I must emphasize. Chair, I think I have a reason why I'm emphasizing the finance, but not to waste time. I think perhaps for me to put an input as far as the eradication of poverty from the human settlement perspective, it's very much important because we do contribute very largely in terms of provision of housing, particularly. And now of late, we're talking human settlements that encompasses any other areas like transportation and social structure. However, Chairperson, we do have different options, perhaps just to respond, not indirectly, but directly so to the Honourable Member's question to say why the increase in slum dwellers. And I thought the presentation was very clear that the population actually remains stagnant. However, if there's a concern that there is an increase, there are many elements that need to be looked at as why there is an increase in population in slum dwellers. But of significance to response is that there's been a study undertaken in terms of beneficiary management as well as the allocation of houses, as well as allocation of human settlements to those beneficiaries who have actually registered in the register. However, that study will actually be presented to Parliament by our Minister, and it's still underway. I must also indicate, Chairperson, that one of the contributions that we as human settlements look forward to is the upgrading of informal settlement, which is part of the outcome 8, of course, in the sense that we're looking at more largely to upscale delivery relative to that. And the most important one, depending on the gap market, of course, we call it affordable housing, we're looking largely at income bracket that is starting from a 10 to 15 million income bracket, I mean 1,000 rand income bracket. So that's the kind of a market that we're currently looking at from the outcome base as an output option to see if those people could just as well be accommodated within the subsidy quantum that we have relative to the 1 billion guarantee fund that has been raised by the President in his first State of the Nation address. And I think these are the issues that are largely undertaken by the Minister to actually escalate the results of the UNCOM 8. Thank you, Chair.
The question was about people in this group 15 to 24 dying. Why is there a smaller proportion of people in that cohort? I think when you look at it in terms of cohorts, it reflects rate of inflection, of infection declining, rather than that cohort being depleted, because it's a proportion that measures across time as people move. So when the earlier cohort had an infection rate of 10.3, the next cohort is 8.7. So there is a decline in the rate of infection. Whether the overall numbers of people in South Africa living with HIV and AIDS has declined or not, I think that the numbers, once they've reached the 6 million mark, it's going to be very difficult to get those to decline. line, one may see that number probably increasing as people use people living with HIV/AIDS live longer. So that number is likely to increase. But the rate of new infections, what this figure suggests is that the rate of new infections has declined. So proportionately in terms of what caught it gets. Second issue is about why so many shared settlements are about 15 or 18% of the housing stock in South Africa. And in there live about probably similar percentages of population, or slightly lower, because the nature of those are that the number of people on average that live there are fewer. In 25% of those shack dwellings, is one person staying in a shack. The second 25% is two people, and then the other 50% is more than two. So it's a phenomena of single persons. The strategy is if you want to enhance families, then we are talking about more than one person, in which case your demand for housing, if it has to address families, it depends on how your strategy, what you intend doing. If you want to replace the 15% with single houses, then you have a serious backlog. But if you have to replace that with more stable families, then the number of backlog may be lower than that number because of the average size of the household that is shared dwelling. They have much lower average size compared to all other forms of dwellings in the country. So there are quite a number of issues that are engaged in there, and of course migration, I mean, the stock of houses that are in the Eastern Cape that are unoccupied because of migration, and then the stock that is overoccupied in the destination areas. And then, of course, indeed, the question of what is the interplay of disurbanization and rural development, and then high unemployment levels of people that may not be able to get jobs, and what is the most critical industry they may be able to work in. Certainly the best match is agriculture, because skill building is an effort, but skill building in agriculture may not take as long. So all those things have to come together and discuss, and I think the crystal ball will show which way maybe issues may be addressed. Thank you.
Okay, DJ, again, give you some bit of time just to indicate that there are people who are sitting at one in the venue who are already outside. Can I take you and then we round up? I know that many questions may not be answered, but can I request that most be done in writing? But also, it might not be in writing, those who are planning a follow-up in terms of this important meeting.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I thought perhaps while I still have the protection of Parliament, I can be provocative to the Deputy Minister and say that we have done a study on the South African population which indicates that, perhaps I should start off by saying that indeed the patterns of migration we see today are of people from rural areas to urban centres, running away from rural poverty, moving into urban squalor. But whether rural development on its own will be an answer to migration is highly questionable. Because, in fact, the study indicates that rural development, if properly done, because rural development effectively entails a full package of services, improvement in education, improvement in infrastructure, and all that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it will tempt everyone in the rural areas to stay there. In fact, rural development properly done will actually result in more migration to the urban centers, which means that the answer probably lies in us striking a balance between rural development and urban development. Because it will give people more choices. If people are educated, become more mobile, they always will search for better opportunities, and they will definitely continue to go to the event centers. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, apologies about that, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, the DG is actually encouraging that everybody participate in the census 2010. Yeah, but it's safe to say thank you to the DGs, Madonsela, Sindane, Shabani, and DG Lohosa. Have I called it correctly?
Yes,
Lohosa. I would really want to thank all of you for the and the teams that accompanied you for a good contribution. And I must also thank the Deputy Minister, Honorable Nice. He was both reinforcing our team and also responsible for the entire government delegation. I want to thank him for that. But surely these are the issues we really have to engage in. And I'm sure all of us agree we're definitely going to plan for a follow-up engagement. And thank you very much. We also thank the Corporation of Rural Development Cluster, even though we couldn't go to your presentation, but we were able to agree that we're going to focus on that matter in particular. The next meeting that will follow, it will start with your presentation, and then we will take up, but we'll still plan. We'll inform you how we'll plan. Thank you very much, Honorable Mayor, ladies and gentlemen. We can attend.
No.